using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
It's Tuesday, the 17th of August, year of our Lord, 2021, day 521 of America Held Hostage. Well, today we're going to take a look at some amazing developments, not only in Afghanistan, but also in the lockdown and the move forward into vaccine passports. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Curious to hear your reaction of this consequential speech by the American president. Didn't run from it. He owned it. He owned his decision. He owned the fact that, as he put it, the buck stops with him.
I hope he gets to own their deaths, too. I feel like I watched a different speech than the rest of you guys. I was appalled. There was such a profound, bold-faced lie in that speech. The idea that we plan for every contingency. I have been personally trying to tell this administration since it took office. I've been trying to tell our government for years that this was coming. We sent them plan after plan on how to evacuate these people. Nobody listened to us. They didn't plan for the evacuation of our Afghan wartime allies. They're trying to conduct it now at the 11th hour. The thing that they were most concerned about was the optics of a chaotic evacuation. Well, they got exactly what they were most concerned of by failing to do what was right when we could have done it. We had all the people and equipment in place to be able to save these people months ago, and we did nothing.
We planned for every contingency, but I always promised the American people that I would be straight with you. The truth is, this did unfold more quickly than we had anticipated. So what's happened? Afghanistan political leaders gave up and fled the country. The Afghan military collapsed, sometime without trying to fight. If anything, the developments of the past week reinforced that ending U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan now was the right decision.
They're just chanting death to America, but they seem friendly at the same time. It's utterly bizarre.
Yeah, that's utterly bizarre. That's her the day before and the day after. And, of course, I said yesterday when they took the flag down. Did they take down the LGBT flag or did they take down the American flag? Because if you look at that picture, going back to June 2nd this year, of course, it was Pride Month. I love the title from Zero Hedge, Pride Comes Before the Fall of Kabul. The month of June, and this is the tweet from the U.S. Embassy. The month of June is recognized as LGBT Pride Month. The U.S. respects that, the dignity, the equality. They're supposed to use the term equity there. And they have hashtag Pride 2021, hashtag Pride Month. So it didn't take too long for that to unfold. There's a lot that we heard there that we're going to unpack, but I loved, as we're talking about the LGBT flag, and I'm sure that's the one they say. They probably burned the American flag along with the documents as they were bugging out. But the Babylon Bee picks up on that same theme. Says Taliban enjoys deep belly laugh over diversity training materials left behind by the U.S. military, according to sources in Afghanistan, says Babylon Bee. The Taliban was having a deep belly laugh over the diversity training materials left behind by the U.S. military previously stationed there. Taliban fighters captured books like Anti-Racist Baby, White Fragility, and The Gay BCs. Many top secret materials were left behind, from battle plans and tactics to books like How to Be an Anti-Racist and Heather Has Two Mommies. Let me tell you, that is the very important battle plan of this spiritual war that we're in. the spiritual war that they have basically thrown the gauntlet down for God, not just us. Pink is for boys, Jacob's new dress. As they're looking at this, the Taliban leader says, "These American fighters thought they stood a chance against us? Pathetic. They haven't even seen the video that the military put out yet, right? Look at this book. The Americans think it is praiseworthy for a boy to dress up like a girl. No wonder they couldn't win a war against us." The Taliban were just kicking themselves after realizing they could have won this war much earlier if they had just called American soldiers by the wrong pronouns. They would have collapsed, right? As Zero Hedge puts it, the hubris of the globo-homo neoliberal elite, pushing their ideology in, of all places, Afghanistan. So, and ask the question, who wants what we're selling, right? We're going to go somewhere and we're going to say, you need to set your government up along the lines that we have of what we have here in America. Seriously? I'm sorry. I would not be supporting that either. I don't blame them for rejecting what we have here in America. This isn't even democracy. We're supposed to have a republic. This isn't even a good democracy. It's intolerant. It's degenerate. So why would they want what we have here? One observer noted wryly that Afghans have freed themselves from the insanity of America's recent cultural revolution. Another alluded to pictures floating around last week of Afghan feminists. Remember that? What a joke that was. But it was all over social media, mainstream press. You saw these feminists saying, you know, we're not going to be dominated by the Taliban. We're going to fight. Well, it looks like they decided not to fight ultimately, right? The humiliation of the Western elites, as they show in this Zero Hedge article, a book I didn't know that Ashraf Ghani, the leader who is now bugged out as he boosted a lot of a lot of cash, and he tried to take so much cash with him he couldn't fit it in the helicopter, had to leave it on the tarmac. But Ashraf Ghani, along with somebody who probably actually wrote the book, Claire Lockhart, had written a book called Fixing Failed States a few years ago. It was lauded by The New Yorker. And so I guess as he's bugging out with his cars full of cash, so much so as RIA Novosti, and it was also quoted by Reuters, said that four cars were stuffed with money. They tried to fit all the money on the helicopter, but not all of it fit. Some of the money was left lying on the tarmac. Does he not know about crypto? I mean, that's the preferred thing. If you're going to be going between borders, like you probably want to put it in crypto. But, you know, just saying. He went physical, and he went physical with fiat currency. I mean, it isn't like he had gold and silver. He went with physical currency. They were doomed to fail from the very beginning. And as as RIA Novosti said, this is an eloquent characteristic, a characterization of the fall of the regime. So maybe, you know, he's going to take some of that fiat currency, run away to a neighboring state, and then make his second fortune by writing another book on how to fix another failed state, since he's got such a great resume at this point. One regional report suggested that he is now in Oman after his plane was said to have been denied entry into Tajikistan. They're kind of not too interested in being the escape point for all these soldiers who are trying to get across the border. Remember that a few weeks ago? How, as Biden was insisting that we were not going to have another Saigon moment, you had an absolute avalanche of soldiers who were deserting from Afghanistan and going into Tajikistan, so much so that they put tens of thousands of soldiers on their border to stop people from crossing. What an interesting idea that you would put soldiers on a border to address something that is happening really quickly. I wonder why Trump never thought of that. I mentioned it to him a few times. Don't think he watched my program. I don't think Alex told him in their deep private conversations. But it's pretty obvious that if you were really sincere about wanting to protect the border, we've got plenty of troops that are not tied up protecting the borders of other countries, even back then when Trump was in office. He said he was going to stop the Afghan war. That was candidate Trump, completely different person. He had some kind of a, transition. He identified as a conservative when he was running for office. And then after he got elected, he identified as a banker and a pharmaceutical executive. He transitioned. And he did it during the transition phase. Of course. That's when they all do it, right? The couple of months there, the 60 days or so between the election and the swearing-in ceremony, where you swear allegiance to the Constitution, that type of thing, just the formality, you know. And so if you're really sincere about doing that, if protecting your border, you could have brought home the troops and you could have put them on the border to protect our border. But no, what we decided he would do was to have a long, drawn-out funding of building a wall that would take more than two terms to do, and he'd have to get the permission of both Congress and the Supreme Court and everybody else. And, of course, they weren't going to give it to him. So he was off the hook. He didn't have to do anything, right? Not my fault, just like Biden says about Afghanistan, just like Trump said about Afghanistan. So there's speculation that this grifting leader almost grabbed a clip of Fagin from Oliver Twist, the musical. I'm reviewing the situation as he's singing that song, as he's grabbing his box of gold and he's looking at, well, what could I do now? Let's see. Could I be this? No, I could be that. I don't know. I'm reviewing all those different options. So now he's reviewing his options, perhaps in Oman. There's speculation that he could eventually make it to the United States, you think? I think pretty good chance of that. Perhaps a parallel situation to the U.S.-backed Shah, who fled Iran for the U.S. in 1979. Yeah, that's Shah. He was a good guy, wasn't he? Well, no, actually, it was. That was my first dose of reality about American foreign policy, when it was very novel when I was an engineering student at USF to see all these people, almost all the Iranians who came to the U.S., and of course, they made it easy for them to come because, you know, they were our allies, and so they were allowing Iranians to come study, so they wanted to study engineering. I didn't really know them. There was enough of them that kind of kept to themselves, but they were having all these demonstrations against the Iranian government. There was the ally and friend of the American government. It's like, what's going on with you guys? You know, and why are you wearing these masks, these ski masks over your face? I don't get that. What are you afraid of? I mean, this is America. We don't take recrimination against people because of their political positions, do we? That was America 50 years ago. And so they were saying, well, we have to wear these because if the Savak sees us demonstrating against this, they will harm our families. And some of them tortured and jailed because we'd be protesting this. I said, who's a Savak? They said, well, it's the secret police trained by your CIA. And of course, it was CIA that overthrew the leftist elected leader and put in the Shah of Iran. And and then after the Shah was kicked out, they took over the embassy, and immediately you had Casey, who was a former CIA and a campaign honcho for Ronald Reagan, went to Iran and made a deal with them. You know, it was, they took those hostages a year before Election Day. Bill Casey goes to Iran and tells the Iranians, don't release them. until after the election. And if you keep them until after the election, we'll make sure that we give you parts for these state-of-the-art fighter jets that we sold you. Otherwise, you won't have them. Now, that's exactly what happened. But it wasn't enough money for them to run their black budget, so they also started selling crack cocaine to fund their secret war in Nicaragua. The Iran-Contra thing, as bad as that was not as bad as the secret crack cocaine war that was exposed by Gary Webb. He paid with his life for that. Over 20 years and some $2.5 trillion of U.S. taxpayer dollars later, Ghani apparently took a few pallets of cash for himself. All the VIPs were being allowed to fly out first. All their cash was being transported first, whether on commercial airlines or private jets to an unnamed Gulf country. So people were seeing this, and there was a lot of resentment and anger from the airport security. And that's really where the riot started. That's when people started saying, this government and the president's not worth defending. Let's get out of here, is a quote from a person on site. And so you had at least three people fall to their death. Two people were shot by American soldiers as the riots began. And then there were another two people that died. The government said seven people, so I don't know what happened to the other two. But there are pictures as the plane was flying off. They tried to stow in the landing gear. You see that happening in the movies, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens in the movies that doesn't work in real life. That's an important bit of information for today's show. The U.S. Air Force C-17 pilot reported that there were 800 people packed into just one of these large transport carriers. As they were able to get off the ground, one of the controllers responded, good job getting off the ground. They had 640 people on board another. And there's only 150 seats in a C-17 cargo jet, but it can carry 171,000 pounds of cargo, so they were able to get it off the ground. And the U.S. is preparing to take up to 30,000 refugees. They'll be first housed in Texas and then in Wisconsin. That number is probably a conservative number, I would imagine. And the Afghans that are coming are first priority. So first priority are the crooked, corrupt politicians. Always remember, that's always the first priority. Then the second priority of the American empire, after the crooked foreign politicians are taken care of, is to make sure that we get as many foreigners into this country as possible. And then the final priority, if we have any room left, or, well, actually, we don't even care. That's the Americans that are there. The Americans are being forgotten, who are left behind. American citizens will not be given priority over the Afghan special immigrant visa applicants, said a Pentagon spokesman, John Kirby. He said, we're going to focus on getting people out of the country and then sorting it out the next stop. It's not going to be Americans first and then SIV applicants. As a matter of fact, the American applicants, as I pointed out yesterday, they were told by the U.S. Embassy, that is no longer there, to fill out an online RAR form and shelter in place. We'll get back to you what we come to expect from our American government, isn't it? So some of them have reportedly reached out to Senator Tom Cotton, and he said, quote, multiple U.S. citizens in Kabul are trapped behind enemy lines. Actually, his office, spokesperson from his office, said that. Cotton said, the situation is dire, but we'll do everything in our power to help keep you informed and to help get you out. Not really clear what he's going to be able to do, since the embassy has already left and taken their LGBT flag with them. American civilians still in Afghanistan were advised to shelter in place while the Afghan president fled the country with so much cash that he couldn't fit it all in his plane and left the Taliban in control. It's not clear how long the State Department envisioned U.S. citizens hiding from jihadist fighters, writes RT, or how they would eventually be rescued by the Biden administration. Oh, don't you think Biden's got a plan? He's got a plan for everything. He knows exactly what's going on. This guy is on top of the situation, right? U.S. officials told the Associated Press on Monday, seven people died at the airport after trying to cling to planes and so forth. Cotton and other Republican lawmakers blasted Biden, saying, quote, Biden's ill-planned retreat has now humiliated America and put at risk thousands of Americans left in Kabul. Biden should, quote, unleash American air power to destroy every Taliban fighter in the vicinity of Kabul until we can save our fellow Americans. So I like this editorial from Robert Bridge on RT. He asked, well, you know, we've seen the Vietnam, the Saigon airlift. We've seen now the Kabul airlift. Will the next U.S. military lift be an airlift out of Washington, D.C. for these corrupt politicians who run this American empire as it implodes on itself? And where will they go? Where will they go? Well, I imagine they're going to have wads of cash to take with them to wherever they go when we run them out of this country, these foreign occupiers, these globalists who have locked us down this last year, Republicans as well as Democrats. It is a bipartisan war against the American people. You better understand that this is where we are right now. As he points out, Robert Bridge, last week we saw another Kodak moment, Chinook helicopters at the embassy as the U.S. 20-year military adventure in Afghanistan crumbled like a stale cookie. And that's what it was. It was military adventurism. There's no justification for that war. The 9/11 was not carried out by the Taliban. It wasn't carried out by Al-Qaeda. It was carried out by our own government. It was an inside job. That one thing we do know for sure. I'm not going to make any guesses as to exactly how they did it. But I can tell you for sure that what we were told, that conspiracy theory is just as absurd and impossible as a magic bullet story for the JFK assassination. Except this was an assassination of our country. This was an assassination of our Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And it was the first shoe to drop. The second one done in tandem with it was this pandemic that's happened to us this last year. The U.S. military's humiliating defeat rammed home the point that firepower alone is not enough to destroy an enemy. And of course, they know that. They've got to get boots on the ground. And then when you get boots on the ground, you still don't win the asymmetric war. They know that they haven't won an asymmetric war ever, ever. They've never won an asymmetric war. When I was doing a lot of research on asymmetric warfare, about the time I did the report with Joe Biggs on AP Hill, I did a lot of research on, they have these meetings, these events, these military discussions, and they're hours long, and they put them up on YouTube. And after 5 years or 10 years, they'll have 200 views, period. But if you look at these, there's a pattern that emerges. take a lot of stuff so you can stay awake. But there's some key information there that eventually emerges. And what they all agreed was that in these countries like Afghanistan and Iraq, that the people were not motivated by their religion. They turned to their religion, but what motivated them, the ultimate cause of what happened, was, and they point out over and over again, you see these leaders, or you see suicide bombers or whatever, or terrorists in other countries. He said, these are typically males who are in their mid-30s, who come from a upper middle class family. They've been college educated, many of them engineers or something like that. So these people have had, they're not turning to this because they're poor, desperate, and ignorant. They're turning to terrorism because we're there. Because they have lost control of their destiny. They don't see a future for themselves. And they have absolutely no good. They're now being held hostage, being held captive. Their country is locked down. Do you understand what they're doing to us now in America? Now they will turn to their religion in their desperation, and that will give them commitment and strength. But the military, the Pentagon, knows to a man that they are not fighting people fundamentally because of their religion. They're fighting them because they've taken away their future. And that's what they've done to us. At the beginning of this war that began last year, under Trump, they went to war with us with economic sanctions. They went to war with the middle class. They've decided that they're going to shut all avenues of work, travel, education, and the rest of this unless we bow to their arbitrary and capricious, vacillating demands. And we're not going to do it. And that's the essence of where this is headed. You hear them talking all the time about the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Yeah, that's a contributing factor. But let me tell you, the thing that is really in view here is the fourth turning, every fourth generation, a restructuring of society. This is going to be a big restructuring of society because it's going to also involve a Fourth Industrial Revolution. But these globalists who have declared war on us, these globalists who have occupied our country and every other country, it's not just America, it's every country, they understand what they're doing. And we need to understand that they're not going to win. It's going to be a difficult time, but they do not have a path to victory. These people are corrupt, they're Satanist, but they cannot subjugate the human spirit. And that's the one thing, it doesn't matter whether it's Vietnam or Afghanistan or any other country. After a while, when they do these things to people, when they take away your life, it galvanizes people. Oliver Stone pointed out in his book, The Untold History of the United States, he said American forces, quote, had dropped more bombs on tiny Vietnam than had been dropped on all sides in all previous wars throughout all of history. Three times as many explosives were dropped on that small nation as were dropped by all sides in World War II. Not just the Americans and the British or whatever, it was the Germans and the Russians and the Japanese. All sides. If they'd all taken all of their bombs and just saturated Vietnam, that's what really happened. And it did not subjugate them. It galvanized them. That was one of the things that they understood in World War II. That was when we first started doing civilian bombing, where they would deliberately target cities, and both sides did that. Germans did it first. They did it with their V2 bombs and so forth. And when you start to bomb civilian populations, again, this is when Western civilization made a big turn away from the justified war theory that Western civilization had always operated under, that you're going to have combatants, they're going to be identified by uniforms and flags and the rest of the stuff, in order to try to keep the civilian population, to try to minimize the loss of life and to limit it to the combatants as much as possible. But during World War II, they decided that they would do massive civilian bombing campaigns. Did it bring Britain to its knees? No. It galvanized them. Did a massive bombing campaign bring Vietnam or Afghanistan to its knees? No, it galvanized them. Will future historians point to America's disastrous defeat in Afghanistan, because there's no other way to describe it, as the main reason for its decline and its ultimate destruction? As they pointed out, you know, hey, look at Russia. Well, I would say this. This is an indication of the status of a failed empire, whether it is the Soviet Union or whether it is America. What we're seeing now is indicative, not the cause. It's not the cause of failure. Russia didn't implode on itself because of the Afghan war. It was already imploding on itself, which is why they couldn't sustain it. And same thing is happening with America. And both countries were involved in an immoral repression of a foreign country for their own purposes, whatever they are. They were not justified in that attack. Not since the days of the Civil War has America appeared to be so dangerously fractured and unstable as a viable and united polity. Talk of secession is rife, as Democrats and Republicans no longer fighting the predictable battles of yesteryear, mostly centered on taxes and spending. They find it almost impossible to live peacefully together under a single roof. And this RT writer points out, when you look at the rise of the so-called squad, led by Occasional Cortex, they somehow managed, these socialist women, four of them, somehow managed to grab a vast amount of power inside of the fiercely elitist Democrat Party. They took a great deal of power right out, right from under the nose of Nancy Pelosi, who is a real expert at elitism and control, isn't she? The explosive rise, he writes, of these four women remains a great mystery, one worthy of further investigation and impossible to imagine without massive media support, together with a helping hand from the regular philanthropic suspects, quote-unquote. The election of Joe Biden was a watershed moment when the U.S. really went to war with itself. I disagree with him. I think the watershed moment when the U.S. went to war with itself was the lockdown 521 days ago. Financially incentivizing medical malpractice, giving massive amounts of governors to entice them to act as dictators. That was when the globalist elite went to war with America. That is exactly when it happened. Let's talk. I want to play for you in its entirety because it's golden. What Ron Paul said 10 years ago, 10 years and 5 months ago, it was March of 2011. And this is a speech that then Congressman Ron Paul said.
I thank the gentleman, and Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to revise and extend my remarks.
Without objection, the gentleman is recognized.
The question we're facing today is, should we leave Afghanistan? I think the answer is very clear, and it's not complicated. And of course, we should, as soon as we can. This suggests that we can leave by the end of the year. If we don't, we'll be there for another decade, would be my prediction. The American people are now with us. A group of us here in the Congress, bipartisan group, for nearly a decade have been talking about this, arguing not to expand the war, not to be over there, not to be a nation building, and the American people didn't pay much attention. Now they are. The large majority of the American people now say it's time to get out of Afghanistan. It's a fruitless venture. Too much has been lost. The chance of winning, since we don't even know what we're going to win, doesn't exist. So they are tired of it. Financially, there's a good reason to come home as well. Some argue we have to be there because if we leave under these circumstances, we'll lose face. It will look embarrassing to leave. So how many more men and women have to die? How many more dollars have to be spent to save face? That is one of the worst arguments possible. We're not there under legal conditions. This is a war. Who says it isn't a war? Everybody talks about the Afghan war. Was the war declared? Of course not. It wasn't declared. There was a resolution passed that said that the president at that time, under the emergency of 9/11, could go and deal with al-Qaeda, those who dealt and brought upon the 9/11 bombings. But al-Qaeda is not there anymore, so we're fighting the Taliban. The Taliban used to be our allies at one time when the Soviets were there. Taliban wants, their main goal is to keep foreign occupationers out. They want foreigners out of their country. They're not al-Qaeda. Yet most Americans, maybe less so now, but the arguments here on the floor is we got to go after al-Qaeda. This is not a war against al-Qaeda. If anything, it gives the incentive for al-Qaeda to grow in numbers rather than dealing with them. You know, the money issue, we're talking about a lot of money. Huh? How much do we spend in a year? Probably about $130 billion, up to $1 trillion now in this past decade. Later on in the day, we're going to have two votes. We're going to have a vote on doing something sensible, making sense out of our foreign policy, bringing our troops home, and saving hundreds of billions of dollars. And then we also will have a vote against NPR to cut the funding of NPR. There is a serious question about whether that will even cut one penny, but at least the fiscal conservatives are going to be overwhelmingly in support of slashing NPR, go home and brag about how they're so great fiscal conservatives, and the very most they might save is $10 million. And that's their claim to fame for slashing the budget. At the same time, they won't consider for a minute cutting a real significant amount of money. All empires end for fiscal reasons because they spread themselves too far around the world, and that's what we're facing. We're in the midst of a military conflict that's contributing to this inevitable crisis, and it's financial, and you'd think there'd be a message in the fact of how did the Soviets come down? By doing the very same thing that we're doing, perpetual occupation of a country. We don't need to be occupying Afghanistan or any other country. We don't even need to be considered going into Libya and where else. Fortunately, I guess for those of us who would like to see less of this killing, we will have to quit because we won't be able to afford it. The process that we're going through is following the War Powers Resolution. This is a proper procedure. It's call attention to how we slip into these wars. I have always claimed that it's the way we get into the wars that are the problem. If we would be precise and only go to war with a declaration of war, get with the people behind us, knowing who the enemy is, and fight, win, and get it over with, that would be more legitimate. They don't do it now because the American people wouldn't support it. Nobody's going to declare war against Afghanistan or Iraq or Libya. So we now have been so careless for the past 50 or 60 years that we have, as a Congress and especially a House, we have reneged on our responsibilities. We have avoided our prerogatives of saying that we have the control. We have the control of the purse. We have control of when we're supposed to go to war. And yet the wars continue. They never stop, and yet we are going to be completely brought down to our knees. We can't change Afghanistan. People who are bragging about these changes, you know, even if you could, you're not supposed to. You don't have the moral authority. You don't have the constitutional authority. So I would say, the sooner,
Yield him 30 more seconds.
The gentleman is recognized for 30 more seconds.
I would say the sooner the better. We can come home. This process says come home. Under the law, it says you should start bringing troops home within 30 days. This allows up to the end of the year after this would be passed. But this needs to be done, and a message needs to be sent. And someday we have to wake up and say, if you are a fiscal conservative, you ought to look at the waste. This is military Keynesianism to believe that we should do this forever. So I would say this is the day to be on record and vote for this resolution.
Every word of that, true. And here we are 10 years later. We know exactly. And he was saying, you know, we've been doing this for 10 years. A lot of us here understand how futile this is. What does it mean to win? What is it? And I said that myself. As we were going through the Trump years, you know, Trump likes to talk about winning. Okay, well, define for me what winning means in Afghanistan or Iraq or all these other places that you said you were going to get out and you didn't get out. What does that really mean? Do you have a definition of that? As Ron Paul said, you know, we should have a vote. You know, that'd be the legitimate way to do it. We make a case for why we need to go to war against somebody, and we define what the end point, what is the goal? We didn't never even have a goal. Nobody even knew what the goal was. We're going to somehow, we're going to rebuild Afghanistan into what? Into a replica of us? Well, you know, that's not, they have to want that. You can't do that to somebody else. And again, when you look at the state of America now, why would somebody want to be like us? That's what I want to know. As Rand Paul also said, empires typically fall for fiscal bankruptcy. I would say that is the penultimate cause. I would say the ultimate cause is moral bankruptcy. And, you know, as I think it was John Adams, who said we should not be going abroad seeking monsters to destroy. You could make a case in any particular country, and of course, you know, look at what we're seeing now on social media. People are accused of being racist, they're accused of being hateful, they're accused of bigotry, and so many times without any justification whatsoever, typically now without any justification. You can accuse anybody of anything. You can, and every country has got its evil parts and evil leaders. So if you are going to demonize somebody and go to war on them against them for that, you have absolutely a target-rich environment, don't you? You can go to war with against anybody at any time. You know, I had as one of the Ask Me Anything questions, somebody said, what political leader from the past would you? And that's the way I understood it from the past. Karen said, you know, I thought you would have said Ron Paul. Yeah, I mean, I don't agree 100% with Ron Paul, but almost 100%, and that's pretty rare. I mean, you probably don't agree 100% with me either. If you're a thinking person, you're not going to agree with anybody 100%. you know, it's pretty close with Ron Paul. Taliban regime is coming to an end, announced President George W. Bush on December the 12th, 2001. As Glenn Greenwald points out, the U.S. government has lied for two decades about Afghanistan. They lied about Afghanistan even before we went to Afghanistan, by the way, that 9/11 lie. Then 5 months after that, December the 12th pronouncement, Bush vowed, in the United States of America, the terrorists have chosen a foe unlike any they've faced before. We will stay until the mission is done. 4 years after that, August of 2006, Bush said Al-Qaeda and the Taliban lost a coveted base in Afghanistan and they know they will never reclaim it when democracy succeeds. The days of the Taliban are over, 2006. The future of Afghanistan belongs to the people of Afghanistan. Glenn Greenwald points out, for two decades, the message Americans heard from their political and military leaders was, America is winning. We're just getting tired of winning. So I guess this explains what is happening now, right? An exchange that will likely assume historic importance in terms of its sheer falsity from a presidential podium, and this is the one that some former CIA analyst said, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever heard, talking about Biden's speech. When he had the press conference question, Mr. President, some Vietnamese veterans see echoes of their experience in this withdrawal in Afghanistan. Do you see any parallels between this withdrawal and what happened in Vietnam, with some people feeling it cuts off? The questioner says, none whatsoever. Zero. What you had is, you had an entire brigade breaking through the gates of our embassy. Six, if I'm not mistaken. The Taliban is not the South. I mean, the North Vietnamese Army. They're not remotely comparable in terms of capability. There's going to be no circumstances where you see people being lifted off the roof of an embassy in the United States from Afghanistan. It's not at all comparable. Well, we have seen, says Glenn Greenwald, these kinds of tactics from U.S. officials. Lying to the American public about wars to justify both their initiation and their continuation over and over again. The Vietnam War, like the Iraq War, was begun with a complete fabrication. As a matter of fact, that movie I was talking about the other day, Errol Morris, The Fog of War, Robert McNamara admits, yeah, we lied to everybody about the Gulf of Tonkin incident. It wasn't, we were not attacked. As a matter of fact, we weren't attacked by the North Vietnamese. As a matter of fact, we weren't even really attacked. You know, we kind of goaded them into making some statements, and then we built upon that initial lie. The Vietnam War, like the Iraq War, was begun with a complete fabrication disseminated by the intelligence community, endorsed by corporate media outlets. Now, Glenn Greenwald doesn't want to be called a conspiracy theorist, so he doesn't talk about the conspiracy theory of 9/11 and the Afghanistan War. He doesn't want to be called a truther. I don't have a problem being called a truther, because the opposite of a truther, obviously, is a liar. That's one term that the left didn't war game for. The establishment didn't war game for that one. You guys are a bunch of truthers. We'll take that term. In 2021, the New York Times recalls some of the lies that were demonstrated on the 50th anniversary of the publication that they were talking about, the beginning of the Vietnam War. They said, brandishing a captured Chinese machine gun, Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara appeared at a televised news conference in the spring of 1965. The United States had just sent its first combat troops to South Vietnam, and the new push, he boasted, was further wearing down the beleaguered Viet Cong. In the past 4.5 years, Viet Cong, the communists, have lost 89,000 men, said McNamara. You can see the heavy drain. But we now know that was a bold-faced lie. From confidential reports, McNamara knew the situation was bad and deteriorating in the South. The Viet Cong have the initiative, said the report. Defeatism is gaining among the rural population, somewhat in the cities, and even among the soldiers. And nevertheless, he just went with it. And of course, they had abandoned the just war, the whole idea of the just war, which is why I spent so much time on that yesterday. You know, we have a bankruptcy of leadership. We have a bankruptcy of money. But it all begins with a moral bankruptcy. And so now this is the situation that we are in.
Hello, Mother.
Hello, Mulla.
Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining. And they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And remember this picture here? This is the reporter that was out there. The reporter that says that it is mostly friendly, even though they're shouting death to America. And again, here's the clip.
They're just chanting death to America, but they seem friendly at the same time. It's utterly bizarre.
At the president.
Utterly bizarre. Yeah. Well, that's her. See, there she is at the bottom with her burqa. You just saw her in that report. And the picture up top with her dressed normally, that was just a day before. So, yeah. Hello, Mulla. Hello, Mulla. Hello, Fada. CNN does it again, and this is not The Onion or the Babylon Bee, comments Zero Hedge. This is really bizarre. It's utterly bizarre. And she's wearing a bizarre burqa now. Saki, of course, Jen Saki, is out of the office until August the 22nd. That's convenient, isn't it? So, direct replies to the press, leave a message, fill out a form online, and we'll get back to you, just like the Americans left behind in Afghanistan. Biden called while all this is happening, and he's hiding out in Camp David. His primary issue, and I joked about this, I said, is he concerned is he going to let the people trying to get out of Afghanistan, are they going to have to show their vaccination status? Will they have to take a test, a temperature scan, and wear a mask in order to get out? Well, fortunately for the people trying to get out of Afghanistan, Biden was focusing his mask mania on schools in Florida to oppose Ron DeSantis, because this is a political virus. That's all it is. That's all it is. If he believed that it was a legitimate threat to life and liberty, he would not be allowing people to walk across our border by the tens of thousands, a large percentage of them testing positive, refusing vaccines, and then they fly them into the country without wearing masks on the planes. They don't believe any of this. They don't believe any of this. They just want to see what we're going to do about it. Right? They don't believe there's a pandemic. They just want to see what you're made of. We need to show them what we're made of before it's too late. We push back on this peacefully with civil disobedience, because if we don't, folks, there's not going to be any other way out of this. So, yeah, he's on the phone as he's hiding from what is going on in Afghanistan. He's on the phone with school officials in Florida talking about how they need to defy the ban on mask mandates. And so he's being criticized not even by Republicans now, but even by other Democrats. You've got Jackie Speier of California says, this is a crisis of untold proportions. This is an intelligence failure. Now, presumably, what she means by that is the intelligence community, the NSA, the CIA, those people, instead of referring to Biden personally as his intelligence failure. But I think both of these apply. U.S. officials are livid over the botched Afghanistan withdrawal. They say the military was rebuffed for wanting a larger role in the evacuations. And I played that clip at the beginning. The guy was saying, we've told them how this ought to be done. We've had 20 years to plan an exit, but and it was obvious a year and a half ago that there was no military solution. As a matter of fact, Rand Paul was saying there is no military solution. All the honest people in the Pentagon were saying that confidentially. And so that's one of the reasons why, not because Trump was trying to keep a campaign promise or even Pompeo, because many times Pompeo would say, well, Trump says we're going to get out. But then we take him into a room and we talk to him and tell him how it really is. But even Pompeo knew that the situation was militarily unsustainable. It isn't something that America decided to do. It was a decision that was forced upon the Pentagon. And it had been coming for a very long time. So we had a lot of people saying, here's how you get out orderly. And that's why when I talked, it was funny. I don't think they actually watched the video, but I had some people comment on BitChute. A lot of trolls on BitChute. It's amazing. Saying when I talked about the bug out from Bagram, the largest military base there, in the dead of night, not telling the Afghan army or anybody that they're leaving. They just tiptoed out almost exactly as an Onion piece 10 years earlier had joked about the leaving of Afghanistan, how it was going to happen in the middle of the night. We don't tell anybody. We just tiptoe out of the country. Hope they don't notice for a while. And so some guys put on a comment and said, well, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to are you saying we need to go back and do it right? Because I hear this from all these conservatives like you all the time. And it's like, oh, really? You obviously have never watched me. I'm not saying we need to go back and do it right. I'm saying if we have any further wars, we need to do them right. And that means the just war issues. But they knew what they were, what they needed to do. But they wouldn't pay attention to it. And the reason they didn't, as you heard that clip at the very beginning of the program, the guy who was talking about it said they didn't want the optics. They didn't want bad optics. Well, they got bad optics now. This is the mindset, by the way, of Hillary Clinton with Benghazi. She was part of the Obama-Biden administration. And Hillary, Obama, and Biden have always decided that they didn't want to look like they were pushing people around with the military. So they would go in with the minimal amount of people required to do something. And that's how you get something like Benghazi. That's how you get the optics of what we've just seen in Kabul with people being airlifted out. Because this is a mentality by Hillary, by Obama, by Biden, of politics first, American lives last. That has always been their policy. That basically has been the policy for the last 20 years. America last. We're going to put American soldiers' lives at risk. We're going to rob the American public of obscene amounts of money because they don't matter. It's our politics that matter. It's our politics first. One official said we could have done a lot more to help. The administration waited too long. Five anonymous U.S. officials told Reuters that, quote, weeks before the Washington-backed Afghan government collapsed, the U.S. military wanted a bigger role in helping to evacuate Afghans at risk because they'd worked for the United States. The officials believed that a more orderly withdrawal would have been likely. And, of course, it could have been done last year. And when when Trump and Pompeo agreed to withdraw in May, they made that agreement with the Taliban, and then Biden extended it to September 11th, I said at the time, I'm not sure that they can last until then. And so what I kind of thought would happen was I thought there would be, and they were in such a weak military position. I was a little bit wrong about it because I thought that what would happen would be that the Taliban would have an offensive like we've just seen this last week. And rather than bug out and run, they would have dumped a massive amount of military in there and restarted the war. That's what I thought he was angling for. Now, that's what Trump would have done. What Biden did was a cut and run. And quite frankly, I prefer that to what Trump would have done, or Tom Cotton, or any of these other people. Need to go there and carpet bomb Kabul till we can get the Americans out. It's like, how are you going to keep from carpet bombing the Americans? Do you know where they are? No, we don't care about that. We just have to be perceived as the baddest guy in the neighborhood. Biden blames everybody but himself for failure in Afghanistan. You heard that clip at the beginning of the show. Trump then says, who or what will Joe Biden surrender to next? Well, good question. Who did you surrender to, Trump? Well, we know. You surrendered to big pharmaceutical companies. You invited RFK Jr. in, and as soon as they got wind of that, they were, it's like kicking an ant bed. Lots of money was donated to the Trump people, and you wound up with a pharmaceutical CEO from Eli Lilly, Alex Azar. And then, of course, we saw that Trump capitulated to the military-industrial complex, the Pentagon, to the bankers, Goldman Sachs. So he was, he transitioned and surrendered to the Pentagon, to Goldman Sachs, to the pharmaceutical companies, to the CIA, promoting Gina Haspel, who sold the lies that were used about mass weapons of mass destruction. Those lies were obtained from torture. She covered up the torture. He promoted her. So, yes, I know that there is a left-wing branch of the CIA represented by John Brennan, James Clapper, but he surrendered to the right-wing branch. People, the right-wing intelligence community, you know, people like Pechenik and others, Flynn, McInerney. So this is where we are. Trump surrendered. Biden surrendered. They're just figureheads. And they don't figure about obeying the Constitution, do they? Banning American conservatives from social media and not the Taliban. That's what's happening now. So there's a lot of articles being put out about how the Taliban has a place on Twitter, but not American conservatives. What does that tell you? This is not, as you see a picture there, President Trump. This is not a defense of Trump. Trump didn't defend free speech. He deserves more than anybody to be canceled. He deserves what he got. I said at the time when he would not defend it for years, and he didn't even have to do it by signing an executive order or anything else. He didn't need any legislation. All he needed to do was just move from Twitter to Gab, but of course Jared Kushner didn't want him to. But he deserved what he got. He's the one American who deserved to be purged because he wouldn't defend free speech. But what this tells you is who the enemy is right now in America. Just look at who's not allowed by the system to talk. We are the enemy. We're the enemy to these people. They're not at war with the Taliban. They're at war with traditional Americans. They're at war with American values. They're at war with Christians. They're at war with the middle class. And they've been at war since this lockdown began. We'll be right back.
Common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
In the course of writing this thing, during a break, I happened to work through my latest issue of National Review. On page 8, they had a few spicy words to say about the kind of people who say the kinds of things that I've been saying above. As a faithful reader of NR for some decades now, it is distressing to be called a, quote, medically and mathematically challenged charlatan, close quote. But one must take a few roughs with the smooths. NR also noted that there were some 99 million Americans who are eligible for the shots, but who have so far declined to get any. I don't know, but maybe dismissing them as morons is part of the problem. Maybe the specter of vaccine passports made it seem far more of a creepy power play than a public health measure. Maybe the fact that a lot of people are resisting the vaccine, even though their jobs are on the line, means that they have thought about it more than NR editorial writers have. Maybe the year of house arrest, for no good reason, has made the people who wanted to keep their small businesses alive a bit jumpy. I grant that it was just a small business, but they liked it, and their livelihood kind of depended on it. Maybe they're still suspicious of that wrecking crew called officialdom. Maybe 99 million people, excluding NR editorial writers, actually noticed when our ruling class disgraced and beclowned and discredited themselves in multiple ways. Instead of calling them names, perhaps it might be better to allow for the possibility that these patriots have perhaps noticed that the pronouncements of the people managing the PR for this pandemic campaign have been, shall we say, stochastic. That means that their edicts have been randomly determined, being distributed ad libitum, kind of like the chimp poo on the floor of the monkey house at the Cincinnati Zoo. The good folks at National Review want us to put our trust in the people who have been telling us manifest whoppers for a year and a half now. Say they told us 10 lies in a row, and NR wants us to believe them on this 11th round, because that is what a public-spirited conservative in 1958 would have done. These are well-meaning bow-tie conservatives who recall the halcyon days of yore when public health pronouncements were not a partisan football. They are appealing to a center that doesn't exist anymore. What do you do when you're the kind of conservative who wants to meet in the center, the place of shared values, but that place is long gone? You try to pretend it is still there, at least for a little while you pretend, but then the camp guard comes by and tells you it's lights out. And that's what I'm trying to tell you right now. It's lights out right now. The actual danger. It is very, very difficult for the government to protect you from a virus like this one. It is impossible for them to do so if the virus, in addition to giving you respiratory trouble, is also delivering them a lot more power. The government can't guarantee your health. That is not something they are capable of doing. The government can, however, take away your liberties. That is their wheelhouse. It is what they do. It is what they're doing right now. With the docile cooperation of a boatload of Christians, I might add.
All right, and that's Doug Wilson. Of course, you can find him still on YouTube at Canon Press. That's the YouTube channel. I liked what he had to say, especially about the pronouncements of our public health officials as being stochastic. Statistically random. Just thrown around like a bunch of chimp poo, as he put it, in the zoo. That's a great analogy. He's a good writer, good speaker. He writes those things out. And I want to talk about vaccine mandates here in the context, and here's the ultimate context, folks. Pfizer is not mandating vaccines for its own employees. Let me repeat that. Pfizer is not mandating vaccines for its own employees. This is a report based on some leaked documents by Breitbart. I'll get to that in a moment, but I want to respond, first of all, to something that I meant to do yesterday. I had several people write me about the show this last Friday the 13th, saying, you're saying that the CDC says that natural immunity is much better than a vaccine. And that's not exactly what I had to say. Fortunately, one person said it's the second hour, and so it kind of gave me a rough idea of where they thought I said it. And maybe I need to distinguish, it's probably my fault because I had so many people write me. It's probably my fault. I need to distinguish a little bit more clearly between my opinions and what I am reading. Where that came from was an article by Western Journal, headline, CDC travel advisory puts those who have recovered from COVID on par with the fully vaccinated. It was an article from August the 10th that I covered on Friday. And what they said in this article from Western Journal, it's interesting that on Monday, when the CDC raised its travel advisory for Israel to its highest level due to a surge in cases, according to Axios, there was a nod to natural immunity. If you recovered from a documented infection, COVID-19 infection, in the last 3 months, follow all requirements and recommendations for fully vaccinated travelers, except you do not need to get a test 3 to 5 days after travel unless you're symptomatic. People can't continue to travel with this. So you see there that they're treating vaccinated patients the same as they're or treating, I should say, naturally immune people, people who have had an infection and whose immune system was trained by that event. That is what's called natural immunity. You get exposed to a pathogen, which happens, by the way, folks, all the time. We're always being exposed to one type of bacteria or virus after the other. We're being exposed to one kind of variant after another. And our immune system identifies that and doesn't even bother to let us know. Isn't that amazing? I didn't get a message. I didn't get an email from my immune system. We've taken care of this. You know, the computer programs like to brag. You know, we found a virus in your system and we took care of it. Yeah, good for me. No, your immune system doesn't do that. God just puts it on autopilot. And once it identifies something, it's like an elephant. It never forgets. And so you have that natural immunity forever. Unlike the faux immunity that you get from vaccines, which does not last, and they've mentioned this for a long time with MMR and many other things. This is why they want to give you a second shot. Or maybe it's just for the money. Who knows? They give you a second shot. They give you a third shot. They give you boosts. They're going to boost you, right? Going to lie to you. Going to steal from you. That's really what he's talking about. So I talked about that, and I said, see, it's the same thing. Here's what I said from the transcript. I said, the CDC travel advisory, listen, this is going the other way. CDC travel advisory is putting those who have recovered from COVID on par with fully vaccinated. In other words, the CDC is now saying if you have natural immunity, that's the same as having a vaccine. And then I commented and I said, well, actually, it's much, much better. Now, that's my comment. That's not what the CDC said. They will never say that. Their corporate sponsors would be upset about that. They would have to take those patches off of their white lab coats that say Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, right? They should be forced to wear those corporate sponsorships just like politicians should be forced to, just like NASCAR drivers do. But nevertheless, that was my comment. I said, well, they're saying that it's the same. And I said, actually, it's much better because it's A, lasting, and because you're not, you don't have, as I put it on Friday, you don't have little gremlins running around in your genetic code. MRI, or M, not MRI, but that's the transcript. It's not exactly right, but mRNA gremlins tearing you up and generating spikes everywhere, accumulating in your organs and messing up your cardiovascular system. You're in much better shape if you get immunity the natural way. It's called real immunity. So let me clarify. The CDC says, and again, it was a head nod to say, all right, you got immunity. We'll treat that the same as if you were vaccinated. But they put a time limit on it. They wanted to say 3 months was the time window that the CDC is willing to accept the idea of natural immunity being effective, because they don't have any expectations whatsoever that their mRNA genetic code injections are going to last for more than 3 months. They don't believe that at all. So, of course, it can't be better. And that's the other thing too. You know, they're not saying that it's better. Well, we'll treat it the same, which means it lasts for 3 months. Israel itself, going back to this article from Western Journal, Israel itself apparently recognizes natural immunity as being equivalent to a fully vaccinated. Reuters reported that the country was reinstituting its coronavirus green pass. That policy allows for only the vaccinated and those who have recovered from COVID to attend events involving 100 or more people. So again, Israel, the CDC, are putting people who have natural immunity on equal footing with the genetic code injections. However, as I said before, I believe it's better. It's going to be longer lasting, and you're not putting something in your body that is going to be creating mRNA gremlins. John Hopkins University School of Medicine professor Dr. Marty McCary said, I've been told that natural immunity could fall off of a cliff rendering people susceptible to infection. But here we are now, over a year and a half into the clinical experience of observing patients who were infected. And natural immunity is still effective and going strong. So again, I say it is another indication that it is better, my comments, my opinion, because year and a half, not 3 months. Not 3 months. This is a letter sent to me from a listener. I wanted to send you this article because the headline struck me as something being no less than idiotic to read. You can't tell me that an individual who gets sick with something doesn't gain any sort of antibodies from it. And this is supposedly the Delta variant is going around them. Around then, if you got sick, wouldn't you be getting the antibodies from that particular strain? And this is an article that he sent. That was from Clint. Thank you, Clint. He sent this from KSAT. Headline, already had COVID-19? Your antibodies won't protect you from getting the Delta variant. Says Jason Bowling of University Health. Oh, okay. Well, he's an expert, right? I guess we just listen to every arbitrary, statistically random pronouncement from anybody. But let's get back to this headline story here that I think is very significant. The point is that Pfizer is not mandating vaccines for its employees. Quote, please note that if you have declared that you are not vaccinated, that you have not been vaccinated, decline to declare your status, or have a medical or religious accommodation, Pfizer will require you to participate in a PCR test. So, you have to take a PCR test, but you can have a medical or religious exemption with Pfizer, and you can also decline to even tell them what your vaccination status is at Pfizer. Why would they be doing this? Do they not believe that COVID is a deadly disease and everybody's going to die? Because that's what they told people to get tens of billions of dollars in profits. Many tens of billions. They don't believe that? Obviously not. You know what they know? They know, what I reported last week, that people who are the most skeptical of this whole thing are PhDs. And as I showed, the amount of time that you spend in school is directly proportional to your gullibility, because you're used to just regurgitating whatever they give you. That's the point of school. They give you something to learn. You learn that. You repeat it back to them in a test. Critical thinking is not taught. And that includes all the way up to a master's degree. When you get to a PhD, you have to do original research. You are typically going to be questioning the status quo. You're going to be questioning conventional wisdom. And you're going to be doing critical thinking. And so all of a sudden, as you see this big decline with education, proportional to it, the more education you get, the more compliant, obedient, and trusting of authority you are. Until you get to the PhD, then it rapidly whipsaws back in the other direction. Who is it that Pfizer needs? They need PhDs. And they need PhDs who are trained in actual science and medicine to do this work for them. And those are going to be the very people who are the most skeptical about doing this to themselves. That's why they're doing this. Because they have to. Because they're not going to play these people for fools. These people will just walk away. And so they give them, they say, well, we'll give you a PCR test. If you don't want to declare it, you don't want to tell us whether you've been vaccinated or not, Pfizer says that's okay. If you want a religious or medical exemption, that's okay too. We'll just give you a PCR test. How about that? And let me say to you that, first of all, if the scientists developing this thing don't trust it, neither should you. If the company that is developing it won't force their employees, then your employer should not be forcing it on you either. This is an important thing to show any employer. This is an article at Breitbart. Report, confidential documents reveal Pfizer does not mandate vaccines for employees. So if your employer values you, this is what we see from this article. If your employer values you, your employer will not make you take this. Sadly, that's not the case for most employers. Most employers do not value their employees. You may be making vital contributions to the company. You may have been a loyal employee for decades. But as we all know, that doesn't buy you any loyalty on the part of your employer, does it? They'll fire you for no reason at all, without any warning. And so if your employer is like that, no matter how long you work for them, no matter how vital you are, your contributions are not recognized, and you don't want to work for an employer like that. You really don't. You're better off on your own or finding another employer. Don't adopt the mindset that you are somehow a lifetime slave to these people. It's a very disrupting thing to change jobs, but just understand that this is the knowledge that is going to make this bitter experience a little bit easier for you. That you're working for a jerk. You're working for an ignorant jerk to boot, right? An ignorant, knuckle-dragging, authoritarian, draconian jerk who wants you to take a vaccine as part of a condition. They have no respect for your humanity whatsoever. Walk away. The leaked documents came after Biden met with airline executives to convince them to mandate vaccines for their employees. Consultants at Mercer, studying over 200 American companies, said that 14% of them require staff to be vaccinated in order to work in the office. So it's not a very high percentage right now, but it's going to increase. And then this was the headline that I went with for the show today. Los Angeles is going to, with this unanimous declaration that you would have to have a vaccine passport to live your life in Los Angeles, worse even than de Blasio in New York City. It was passed 13-0 by these know-nothing city councilmen in Los Angeles. But they did not make an exception for retail. See, even in New York City, de Blasio shut everything down for restaurants, gyms, and entertainment venues, but he excluded retail stores. These authoritarian Marxists in L.A. included retail, which means that you're not going to be able to not just go to a restaurant, you won't be able to go to a grocery store. That's a retail space. You'll not be able to go to a grocery store in L.A. without a vaccine. And listen to these idiots. Councilman Mitch O'Farrell, who says, instead of fighting science, we should be fighting the virus. No, they're not fighting science. Nobody's fighting science. And they're not fighting the virus. What they're doing is they're fighting their own people because they can. As Doug Wilson pointed out, taking your freedom, that's their wheelhouse. The data is clear, said O'Farrell. The data is clear. Vaccines are safe and effective. Yeah, the data is clear that you've boosted us. You've lied to us. You've stolen from us. And you are cooking the books. But again, because it's science, right? O'Farrell said choosing not to get vaccinated against COVID-19 is, quote, immoral. Said some people choose to, quote, listen to some delusional rant on Twitter. Let me tell you, you'd be hard-pressed to find anything on Twitter that's less informed, or more uninformed and more delusional than that particular councilman. Just science. Somebody called in a resident, Elizabeth Elliott, called in the meeting to make a comment. She said it is, quote, unethical to force people to inject a vaccine into their body. She said, quote, people should have medical freedom to research and to make their own health decisions. We as citizens have a right to privacy, especially with our health information. So that's reported by the Epic Times. But yeah, you'll need it to, if they're going to do it for all retail spaces, that means you're not going to be able to go to a grocery store unless you're vaccinated in Los Angeles when this kicks in a couple of weeks. These people are essentially selling the mandates that will be used to hang them politically. People are going to push back against this. A commentator at American Conservative Movement said that these L.A. officials are delusional. In his article, he said, on August the 11th, the council members voted unanimously on an ordinance that seeks to starve out the unvaccinated by denying them access to retail grocery stores. The council members want to persecute the people they're supposed to serve, blocking their family, friends, and neighbors from bars, gyms, entertainment venues, restaurants, and retail stores, again, including grocery stores. This is interesting. We've had now reports coming out of mainstream media being put out by Border Control, FBI, I should say, saying that they're intercepting a lot of counterfeit vaccine cards from China. They're saying that they were seized in Tennessee, in Memphis, Tennessee. I suspect that these are coming in internationally via Federal Express. It's kind of their one of their main hubs there in Memphis for Federal Express. So what they found, and I kind of found this interesting, that Border Patrol and the FBI would put this out when this is a shipment that was coming from China going to New Orleans, intercepted in Memphis, Tennessee, again, probably through Federal Express. The ultimate destination was New Orleans. They found 51 blank counterfeit vaccination cards. Is this something that you would expect the Border Patrol and FBI to write an article about? What they're doing is they're trying to intimidate people. Say, we're going to find out. Right? But when you look at these vaccination cards, I look at them and I say, is that really that hard to counterfeit? Looks like it'd be pretty easy to me. You got a double-sided printer. You just go out and find some card stock that's about the right. This is not like the fiat currency. It's a little bit harder to counterfeit, a lot harder to counterfeit. They've done a lot in terms of constantly changing the Federal Reserve's fiat currency to keep it from being printed out or photocopied or whatever. I mean, that's a special paper. They got stuff all woven through it and all. That isn't the way it is with these vaccine cards. I mean, they're just a piece of white paper. It's got the CDC logo on it as if that would be something difficult to do. Where they would catch you on this, and I'm just wargaming here, I'm not suggesting anybody do this, but if one were to do this, one would have to make sure that it's not that hard to have something that looks like this. This is child's play. They said they've had 121 of these seizures, and they're coming from China. It's always China. Those Chinese people, you know. And I think Chinese are not good guys, but, you know, this sounds like, yeah, whenever you hear them saying it's Russia, 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 it's China, China, China. They've had 121 seizures altogether. 3,017 of these cards have been intercepted. They said they're always from China. See, we can't even do our own counterfeiting here domestically anymore. We can't do anything for ourselves. It's not that hard, actually. It is something that you can do yourself. But, you know, the Chinese are much more experienced in doing counterfeiting. That's a big part of the China price. The big part of the China price is to steal intellectual property. And this has been an ongoing issue for a very long time. People buying, for example, brake pads. You know, that you would have American multinational companies would go to China and they would want to have the cheap labor to have their products produced in China and then brought back into the United States. And so whether they're selling toothpaste or whether they're selling brake pads, they would go to a Chinese company and they would give them all of the artwork and all the rest of the stuff, and they would have the tools to make this stuff. And then they would, since the Chinese companies, and you have to have somebody from the Chinese Communist Party as part of your corporate structure, and they're not the most honest people, the kind of gangsters. And so since they're gangsters, and since a big part of the China price is not just currency manipulation, it's not just slave labor, but it's also copyright violations and privacy, these people start to manufacture your product. They do knockoffs of your product, but they don't put everything in there that you would put in. And so the dilemma that was happening to these multinational corporations was that their product, for example, something that's critical like a brake pad, instead of using the materials that you would use for a brake pad, they would use like maybe some compressed cardboard paper, and it would be in terms of appearance, it would be indistinguishable from the real thing. People would put it in their cars would fail, the brakes would fail. People would then sue this company because it looked so much like the real thing, and some of it was the real thing, the packaging and other aspects of it, but they would cut corners. And so that became a real big issue for people, that part of the China price. So, you know, they've had a lot of experience in terms of doing counterfeiting. But, I mean, we're looking at 121 of these, and they're about 50 each. So, you know, is that really that big of an issue here? They said, well, we knew the cards were fake because it was imported by a non-CDC medical entity, and this was not the first time they'd seen this shipper. Such counterfeit cards have typos, unfinished words, and some of the Spanish verbiage on the back was misspelled. So make sure that you spell it right when you do this, because if they're going to keep you from going to buy groceries, game on, buddy. Anything is on the table. I'm just saying, if you're going to do something like this, it's not that hard to get the words spelled right to make it look exactly the same. You will need to make sure, however, that the information that you put in there is going to be somebody that's going to be in their computer database somewhere. So it's somebody that's really been vaccinated. So find the name of some sheep, make yourself a fake ID to go along with it, and if you were going to do something like this, it's just an idea. I'm just wargaming this, of course. You know, that's what a smart person would do, I guess. I don't know. Shocking and dehumanizing discrimination against the unvax is about to make life very difficult, writes the organic prepper. Because the mainstream media and the narrative are tightly controlled right now, this isn't just the thought of as acceptable. It is now virtue signaling, and it is now demanded by these people. It's not just that you've got to take the vaccine. You've got to accept the narrative. And again, this is the aspect of totalitarianism. That's why I did that 10-minute report about the last piece of Samizdat that was done by Solzhenitsyn before they kicked him out of the country, and that was to say, do not live by lies. They want you to not only say that 2 plus 2 equals 5. He said, we understand there's a lot of duress. You may be forced to say that 2 plus 2 equals 5, but that's not their goal. Their goal is to get you to actually believe that 2 plus 2 equals 5. That's he didn't use that analogy. That was George Orwell's analogy in 1984. But both Orwell and Solzhenitsyn, who lived under that kind of totalitarianism, understood what it was, and that's what we're living under right now. You must believe in the pandemic. You must believe in the vaccine. You heard that report that I had yesterday in Melbourne. They go through the gauntlet of cops, and by the way, I should have mentioned it yesterday, those people actually did get arrested. Probably got hit with a big fine as well. There was, I'll play that, it was 45 minutes long. I'll probably pull in some other aspects of that as well, because at one point in time, as they were arresting them and doing other things, Marty, who was recording that, if that's his name, said, are you proud of yourself doing this? Do you realize what you're doing? And the cop said, yes, I'm very proud of what I do. I'm proud of my work. That's what we're up against. We're up against those kind of people. And it is a war. It is a war to dehumanize us, to starve us out. And let me tell you something. Everything is on the table. You got Kay Ivey saying, as I played a couple of weeks ago, it's the unvaccinated folks that are letting us down. It's those unvaccinated folks. Nick Cohen of The Guardian says it's only a matter of time before we, quote, we turn on the unvaccinated. He said the vindictive will start to describe COVID as a sickness of choice. Well, they already have. And he went on to say rational people ask why they should continue to accept restrictions on their freedoms because of ignorant delusions. Well, I've been asking myself that of these people who have bought into all this nonsense for quite some time, frankly. But he's looking at it from the other perspective. He says employers will demand to know what possible argument there is against allowing the owners of pubs, airlines, restaurants, hotels, holiday homes, grocery stores, to demand proof of protection when immunity passports might save their business. Again, if your vaccine works, then you don't have to worry about this. And so they said, yeah, but we can still get it. Our vaccines are not fully effective. And so, but what our vaccines do is they keep us from spreading it. Well, now we know that's not true either. So now they flipped the narrative again. Again, it's kind of, as Doug Wilson pointed out, it's kind of stochastic. It's kind of random. Flip-flops back and forth one way or the other. And so now what they have said is, well, okay, now the vaccines are completely effective, but we can still transmit just as readily as the unvaccinated people. Therefore, there is no reason, folks, if this is all about stopping transmission and not protecting you individually. If your vaccine, we're back to, if your vaccine works, you're fine. If your seatbelt works, wear it if you want to. If your helmet on the motorcycle works, wear it. But you don't make any demands on me. Dr. William Schaffner at Vanderbilt University says unvaccinated people are variant factories. Well, just the opposite is actually true. And then you get to the truly criminally insane. An attorney from Florida, for example, Pam Keith, suggests that the unvaccinated be denied access to any federal benefits, including things that they've already paid their entire working life for, like Social Security. She said, here's a good way to make people get vaccinated. You condition all federal benefits on proof of vaccination. That includes Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, military pensions, VA benefits, federally subsidized housing, uppercase, all of it. I bet that will move things along. Well, see, they've already thought of this a long time ago. If you look at the Aadhaar system in India, that's an ID system. You have to get the number from the government there before you can get any of the welfare payments out there. That's how they bludgeon people. And, of course, that's a brainchild of Bill Gates, who has also participated in that. Bill Gates, who wanted everybody to get an ID by 2020. He's right on schedule. Other people jumping in on Twitter as the organic prepper collected these, saying, deny any Medicare, Medicaid, or private insurance company coverage for these people who are not vaccinated, or charge them $5,000 a year more on their policy. Suspend all their gun and driving licenses or access to loans and so forth. And that's what we have now. We have, instead of a society that is based on rights, we have a society that is based on government-granted privileges. And that's what these people are demanding. These people are demanding. This is a wide part of our country now that is embracing all of the worst aspects of the Stasi, of the Soviet Union, and the rest of these. Just take a look at it from this perspective now. This is from Vaccine Impact. New York Jews have embraced Nazism, and they're partnering with IBM to, quote, show your papers. This is the Chatham Synagogue, for example, in New York. Made it very clear on their website that in order to worship at their premises, you have to be masked and vaccinated. Our Shabbat services are open for all vaccinated and masked attendees. Otherwise, you're on Zoom. The Potsdam-based Jewish congregation Beth El has similar requirements. On their website, they instruct their visitors to have proof of vaccination in order to be able to attend high holiday services. The Woodstock congregation of New York demands that only vaccinated individuals attend their services. All congregants who wish to attend high holy days in person submit documentation of their vaccination status. Where will that be verified by? Well, it'll also be verified there in New York by the Excelsior Pass created by IBM, the same IBM, and they start out with that article on Vaccine Impact. They show a picture of Watson meeting with Adolf Hitler and other high officials as he was creating the codes to track people in their concentration camps. And so it's now a collaboration yet again with IBM to track people like cattle. Same IBM that helped Hitler in the 1930s, and these Jews have embraced it. And it's not limited to synagogues. Also, Yeshiva University Group, also based in New York, is doing the same thing. You need to have your IBM Nazi pass with you, they call Excelsior. It came out of an initiative of an IBM project known as Watson Works. But it's not just Jewish people. Take a look at a Baptist church, a black Baptist church up in Atlanta, in and around the Atlanta area. Only vaccinated people may attend that church. That church has now fired unvaccinated staff, will not give them a religious exemption whatsoever. Think about that. I've got to recognize your religious freedom, says the Baptist church there. There he is, right there. Dr. William Flippin. That's his name, Flippin. Maybe think of Flip Wilson. The devil made me do it. I think the devil made him do this. The devil made him close down his church for the last 18 months. He's just now opening it up. And the devil has made him inordinately afraid of death. He needs to go back and check his what he's trusting in. He needs to go back and ask himself if he thinks he's going to live forever. Because he's kicking people out without any religious exemption. And this, no children allowed. Presumably because the children are not going to be vaccinated. He doesn't want them around. He has made the vaccine his Lord and Savior. He believes in the vaccine. He trusts in the vaccine. So this is Grove Baptist Church, Greater Piney Grove Baptist Church. William Flippin. This is a guy who, again, he's going to have a real hard time following Christ and a lot of other. Is he going to be able to go through and visit the sick? Well, of course not, because he's too concerned about his own health. Right? I've told a story several times about the pastor who was not concerned about it. He thought I had very contagious meningitis, and he came in when I was a kid. That's not the kind of pastor. That's the kind of pastor you want. You don't want this kind of pastor. His church has got 3,000 members. I would say his big corporation has got 3,000 members. It's not a church. Yeah. Submit to the temperature. Oh, by the way, you got to get vaccinated. First of all, we're not even going to have this discussion if you're not vaccinated. Now, if you are vaccinated, what you're going to have to do is you're going to have a temperature check at the door. You're going to have to wear a mask at all times. You're going to have to sign waivers. You're only going to have 200 people at a time attending. They're all going to stay 6 feet away from each other. And any staff members who don't want to get vaccinated, they're fired. No personal, no religious exemption. He says he's had some other churches reaching out to him wanting to do likewise and asking him how it's working out for them. He says, I am so hopeful that they will follow the science. See, that's what he is. I guess maybe we should call him a Scientologist or something. He's not a Christian at all. He's not trusting God. He's too worried about the. Quite frankly, look, you probably just don't even want to get in your car and drive to that church because you could die in an automobile accident. I've known people who have died on their way to church. It is a possibility. It's rare. But it is a real thing there. This guy is a Scientologist. These other pastors are Scientologists. They're not Christians. They're following a religion of Scientism. And I guess you could kind of say, you know, the mRNA is kind of like the midichlorians, like the Scientologists are always going on about. It is science fiction. This is science fiction that we're talking about here. Tyler wrote this about his church. He said, just wanted to show this to you. It truly breaks my heart how the church that he's going to says can unknowingly, church that I've loved, that's helped me to find my way when I needed it most, how can they be so ignorantly say not just one, but every single parroted line to push the vaccine on the people? They're not requiring it yet in this particular one, but they're pushing it, and that's just around the corner. Let me just say, you know, we call ourselves Christians. Where does that come from? Well, that was a term that was first given to followers of the way by people who are not, and as you see in Acts. And what it really means is it comes from the root words that we have for anthropology, you know, study of man or mankind. And so what it really means is Christ's men. We're Christ's men. We're not Fauci's men. We're not CDC's men. We're not the NIH or the FDA's men. It's important to know this. It's important also to know, when you look at these different churches, that church fellowship is very, very important to you. And it's also commanded if you want to be a Christ follower. And so, you know, people are not going to be perfect in any church. You're going to have disagreements with it, but you need to have discernment right now. And you need to understand that when push comes to shove, and it's going to be coming to that really soon, that these people in a church like that are not going to have your back. Let's talk about the Rutherford Institute put out a publication, Know Your Rights, How to Request a Religious Accommodation, and against these mandates in the workplace. They point out the government, and again, this is John Whitehead at the Rutherford Institute, the government may try to abridge our fundamental rights. Well, we know they will. It may refuse to recognize them. It may even attempt to nullify them, but it cannot litigate, legislate, or forcefully eradicate them out of existence. But they can shove them to the side and ignore them, as we see courts regularly doing, to clear explicit law, right? The right to bodily integrity has long been recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court. And so this is interesting from a standpoint of legal exercises, but we all know that if we appeal to politically appointed judges, that they're going to do whatever they wish, and they're going to play politics with our rights. But he does mention that there is a precedent for this, going back not to Roe v. Wade, but to 1952, Rochin versus California. Roe v. Wade is not about, and isn't it interesting they called it a right to privacy? These people don't believe that there should be any privacy for anyone, but they still have Roe v. Wade there. It was not even really about my body, my choice, because this is about another body, another person. Half the time, a different sex, many times a different blood type and so forth. This is a different body that you're doing this to. But when he talks about forced vaccinations, he's saying that is quickly shaping up to be the next major legal front. But it's not going to be so much forced vaccinations. He mentions again the 1905 Supreme Court case, Jacobson versus Massachusetts. You've seen that many times. Understand that that did not force Jacobson to get a vaccine. It's always put out there by Dershowitz and these other totalitarians who want to argue the case that, oh, this is easy. We've already got a Supreme Court precedent. Well, I've got a lot of Supreme Court precedents that are being ignored. I talk about it with free speech, Marsh versus Alabama frequently. But Jacobson versus Massachusetts, what he fought was a fine. He and his son did not get a smallpox vaccine that was mandated by the local government. And so, as a result, they did not do what Dershowitz wants to do. Alan Dershowitz, the pedophile lawyer who defended Epstein. He says, well, yeah, we'll strap you down and force that into your arm. That's not what they did. And that's not what the Supreme Court said needed to be done. The Supreme Court said, no, you can opt out, but you'll have to pay the fine. End of story. That's not insignificant. And that was in today's dollars. That was a very significant fine. But they did not strap them down and do a forced injection, just like here in Texas. They will strap you down and do a forced blood draw if they think that you are under the influence. He also mentions that there's the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits employment discrimination based on religion, although there have been very few cases that have been dealt specifically with Title VII's ban on employment discrimination based on religion in the context of religious objections to vaccine mandates by the employer. It appears established that if an employee holds sincerely held religious beliefs in opposition to receiving a vaccination, an employer that has a rule requiring the vaccination must reasonably accommodate the employee's beliefs. So those employees should be able to go back and sue that phony Baptist church pastor, Mr. Flippin. So we have some nurses that have chosen to lose their job rather than to get the vaccine. This is sent to me by a listener. Washington Post talked about it. I thought it was interesting, their response. They were on a corner protesting this at a medical center that was forcing them to do, a group of about 20 people, nurses, some of them in scrubs, holding up signs opposing the vaccine mandate. And I just want to say again, every time we talk about this, it never ceases to amaze me that we have politicians or we have bureaucrats, public health officials. Occasionally there'll be somebody at the top of the public health official that's a doctor. But the fact that they're not the doctor of these nurses, they're not the other doctor's doctors. Whatever happened to the doctor-patient relationship? Well, you're not going to have that if you don't have any individual informed consent. Public health is subjugating the individual's health desires, the individual's health needs, the individual's religious beliefs, as subjugating it to the imagined need of the collective, and it is an imagined need. Who will say, who will be the one to say what the collective needs? Well, that will be the public health bureaucrat. So you've got these bureaucrats, many of them just politicians. They're not doctors. They're not good doctors. They're not the doctors of the people that they're bossing around. But they will make the statements, and they will dictate to doctors and to nurses what they must do. Just like you see the city council in Los Angeles dictating to doctors and nurses, for example. There'll be people who won't be able to go grocery shopping unless they get vaccinated, doctors and nurses, because this city council decided that. That's the upside-down world in which we're living right now. So they said, as they were standing there, they had a lot of people who were supportive of them. An ambulance beeped its sirens. A truck driver after truck driver yanked on their horns until every so often there'd be one angry voice that cut through the traffic or a middle finger that jutted out of a car window. One driver yelled at them, said, "I hope you all get fired." And this was their reply. One woman responded, said, "We're going to get fired, and you'll need us next week." I love that response. Yeah, we're going to get fired, and you're going to need us. And so, yeah, you celebrate that. So anyway, they're requiring that. I want to play for you what is going on in Hawaii. As we're talking about legal action against these vaccine mandates, there is a lawsuit that is setting up for a lot of people to push back against these mandates in Hawaii. Here is what one of the lawyers, a couple of lawyers who are going to be part of that lawsuit, had to say about what is happening in Hawaii.
The tests we've seen around the country from doctors are showing that almost 45,000 people that got these vaccinations were dead in 72 hours. Women who are concerned about being pregnant or getting pregnant are looking at this vaccine, and no one really knows, other than the fact that you can still get the virus if you're vaccinated. You can still spread the virus if you're vaccinated. It has now spread not only to unions, to public schools, to private schools, workers all over the state that can't support their families because the governor mandates you're getting inoculated or you're getting fired. With influenza, when they found 53 deaths as a result of the vaccine, they suspended the vaccine. We can show 45,000 deaths in 72 hours from this vaccine. You have companies making $1 billion plus a month. The pressure they put on the FDA to endorse these vaccines is unbelievable. I think they'd rather pay people for the deaths of their family members than stop making the $1 billion a month. So we're going to go through now the plan, what we're filing, who we're filing for, and the progression for the rest of the year, what we're going to do to try to help workers, parents, and everyone else that's going to be affected by what the existing governor's order is.
I'm Attorney Sean Louise, and together with Michael J. Green and Kristen Kokara, we're going to represent the plaintiffs in a class action against the governor's vaccine. Different aspects of the vaccine mandate that violate our client's right to autonomy in their personal health care decisions, to decide what is best for them, what is best for their families, and they're being deprived of that right in violation of the First, the Fourth, the Fifth, the 14th Amendments, the Civil Rights Act of 1871, 42 U.S.C. Section 1983.
My name is Kaimi Pelekai. I'm a fire captain.
Yeah, I'm going to come back and play his separately there. But, you know, when we look at this, you just heard that last, that second lawyer talk about all the different things that are being violated with this. They do not have a legal leg to stand on. This is a complete overturning of our legal structure. And it's not just the United States. This is every single country. They are overthrowing. This is martial law. That's why I played that clip from Australia. This is full-on martial law without exception. These people are thumbing their nose at every law they swore to uphold, at every constitution, at every charter they swore to uphold. It's just absolutely unbelievable. I want to play for you what one of these people that they're going to be representing in Hawaii in this lawsuit. This is a fire chief And I want you to hear what he has to say.
Governor Ige's mandate was interpreted by our mayor to mean if you didn't put an experimental drug in your body that you don't have enough information about to make an informed decision, or you didn't get an approved religious or medical exemption in the next 10 days, it literally said you could be fired. I spent the last 20 years of my life and 37 years watching my dad do this job. And because I didn't want to put an experimental drug in my body, I got to give that all up. I got to choose between my personal freedom and I'm talking not just talking about me, but people who are first responders like me, who love our jobs, who love the people of Honolulu so much, we leave our families every day willing to sacrifice our lives for them. That's how much we love this city and the people of this city. I leave my family every day knowing I may not come home. And I gladly do it with a smile on my face because that's who I am. That's who every one of us is. Every firefighter, every policeman, every paramedic, every EMT, every lifeguard. We run in when everybody's running out. We jump in front of the bullets when they're being fired. We swim into the 40-foot waves. And I have to choose between that career that I've committed to or put in an experimental drug that I don't know what it's going to do to me in my body, or I got to give all that up.
You know, we go through these different stages when you have a doctor tell you that you have a terminal illness and you've just got a short period of time to live. We're all going to go through this type of thing. Grief, denial, as you see him looking at this. I am the doctor telling you that this society has terminal cancer and there's a very short period of time left for us to live. You better do something about it. The good news is that unlike terminal cancer, you can do something about this. Again, talking about the clip yesterday, you know, when we look at the situation in Australia.
I've got an exemption.
You got an
exemption?
Yep. If people in Australia, if it wasn't just Marty and his friend, if everybody there in Melbourne, millions of people took to the street, even though, you know, you look at that, streets are empty, except for several dozen, maybe 100 or 2 cops that are out there. What if a city of several million showed up? What would those cops do? They'd run for cover. You wouldn't have to have a fight with them. They would stand down. We won't stand up. If we stand up, they will stand down. So right now, we're in denial that this is happening. You better stop. You better do something about it. Because this is a terminal illness that is not inevitable. It is something that we do not have to go through. But we're going to have some treatment of this pathetically sick world in every one of these countries that we're in. We're all in different stages of this terminal cancer. They're pretty far advanced in Australia, but we're right behind them. We'll be right back.
Hear news now at APSradionews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find
at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. I have an email here from Kimberly. She signs it Kimberly in Cell Block, California. Says, I'll make this succinct. My husband's coworker just died. The water cooler rumor is that he was sick for 10 days, refused the warp speed, quote-unquote, vaccination, distrusted doctors, refused to seek treatment, and died at home. He was 41 with no known medical conditions. They're labeling it a COVID-related death. Because, everybody's dying from... If you die, you died from COVID, right? Did they do a test? Did they do an autopsy? Nevertheless, Kimberly was saying, this is all third-hand information. But I realized that if I got sick at this time, I would be just as hesitant to trust my HMO doctor to help me. And it's a wake-up call. And this is why I read this, and it's good. I'm glad that Kimberly sent this, because we all need to think about this. When you look at the state of corruption and medical malpractice that exists in the corporate hospitals right now, you better start thinking about where you're going to get medical care. She said it's a wake-up call to get proactive and have a plan and to find a doctor that I can trust. If that dead guy had had a doctor that he trusted, he could still be alive, because I probably did not die of COVID. But still, there are times that you need to have medical care. You need to find a doctor that you can trust and a doctor that trusts you to make medical decisions. And it's way too many doctors, and have been for quite some time, that don't respect your choice, or just want to dictate this to you in a kind of God complex. You don't want a doctor like that. So we all need to have a good doctor that we can trust. This, by the way, is from a listener who works in an ER, actually an EMS person. But he says, I want you to take a look at this. And he sent me some pictures. I'm not going to show them. They were verification. And I'm not going to show them just in case. I don't want to get him in trouble. The hospital, for where he works, the hospital ER says that they're overcrowded to the point of diversion. There are plenty of empty beds in the ER, yet they're reporting that they are being overrun with patients. The waiting room has zero patients waiting. The charge nurse sent this patient to the waiting room because there's no room for her. As I said before, our call volume has not reflected the reports of ER overcrowding. Yet the ER can still get full at times, and that is normal. And so what he says in more detail in another email that he had sent earlier was, he said, here's an update on what's happening. And he said, our call volume does not reflect the influx of patients that we're seeing in our local emergency rooms. If they didn't arrive in an emergency vehicle, they arrived in their own vehicle. In other words, the majority of these people are stable, not experiencing an immediate life-threatening condition. There are exceptions, of course, but not many. Last year, people were too afraid to even go to the hospital. This year, they're being frightened into going to the hospital for anything, even just for a positive test. So this is the difference. Now, as they come in to the hospital for anything, he said, I did some asking around and found out that the hospital general admission rooms are full, which causes the ER to be unable to send their patients to a room when they're admitted. The patients get admitted, then they have to wait until a room becomes available. So that bed in the ER remains occupied as the waiting room fills. This also causes our ambulance crews to be extremely delayed with our patient on the stretcher in the hallways. We had a crew wait for 8 hours yesterday. Another was at the 2-hour mark with an estimated 5 hours to go this morning when I left work. Every crew we have waiting in the hallway in an ambulance is out of service. As a result, we have some crews who are running one or two calls because of hospital delays, while others are running 7 or 8. At times, we fall to 0 ambulances available because of our crews waiting at the hospital for hours.
So are the hospitals getting federal money for positive COVID test admissions? Oh, yes, they are. This is not his letter. But as I reported last August, the American Hospital Association, the AHA, and I said, yeah, this is an aha moment, because that's when they were complaining that the federal government was not paying them their COVID bonus. If they diagnose somebody with COVID, of course, they get the $13 cash bonus right up front, and then they get a 20 or 25% bonus on everything that they do to that person. So if somebody comes in, they got a broken leg. If you give them a COVID test, that's why, as this listener has pointed out before, they got people coming in with heart attacks. The first thing they do is take them in for a COVID test. If they test positive, now they get that bonus on all of the expensive treatments they may do for somebody who has a heart attack. And the AHA was saying, wait a minute, you're denying some of these things that were done as clinical diagnoses because we don't have a PCR test. You told us at the beginning of this that you didn't have enough tests, and you told us that the ones that you did have were not really that accurate. And now you're telling us that you told us just to do a clinical diagnosis, and now you're saying you're not going to pay us the bounty for doing that? I mean, we participated. Now, this is my commentary. We participated in your fraud, and now you're going to back out on this? Anyway, back to what the listener says. So, are they getting federal money for positive COVID test admissions? If so, I guess that would explain the bottleneck effect that we're seeing. If there aren't many critical patients checking themselves in, are the hospitals admitting based on other criteria, maybe them being a positive case? So he says, after my shift ended this morning, I had breakfast with a coworker. He's not a sheeple. He claims also a supervisor. He says he claims the hospitals in our area have updated their patient triage computer program. He says the very first page that pops up when they triage a patient is now a vaccine compliance page. See? This is why that first letter says, you know, we need to think about what we're going to do for medical care. Because they're going to be triaging people based on vaccination status, even at the hospitals. He even thinks it has a passport field on it. And if you've refused the vaccine, I can't confirm these claims yet, but I'm working on getting a screenshot of this. He says my coworker says he can get me one. So he says, I wouldn't bring this up if I didn't trust this guy and the fact that he knows what he's talking about. I want to talk a little bit about the fraud of these toxic so-called medicines, by the way. One thing that I put up on Twitter yesterday, as we're talking about legal action, let me suggest to you one of the things that you might try. And it's probably not going to prevail with these crooked judges. Again, you know, they want to say that a president in an election does not have standing to question what happened in the election. I mean, they can throw out anything that they wish. You've had the Supreme Court refuse to even hear a vaccine mandate case brought to them on kind of an emergency basis by university students. It was Barrett who threw it out, and not a single judge said, no, we think we ought to hear that. You know, they don't respect your rights. But let's just assume this is an argument that you can make. And that is, this isn't even a vaccine. So why do the pharmaceutical companies have legal immunity to this? It's not a vaccine. Because, as I tweeted out yesterday, I said, what makes these jabs a vaccine? Is it the fact that it's injected? You can inject saline, you can inject heroin, you can inject a lot of things into your body, but that doesn't make them a vaccine, so it's not the fact that it's injected that makes it a vaccine. Always in the past, a vaccine was something that injected a dead or disabled pathogen in order to train your immune system. But that's not what these Trump shots are. These Trump shots are forcing your body to manufacture a toxic spike protein, according to Moderna itself. We'll turn President Trump. We can beat everybody else because we can make the people's bodies a manufacturing plant. So we don't have to manufacture this. So if they're going to manufacture, if this is an injection that causes your body to manufacture a toxic spike protein, they don't qualify for the legal immunity as part of this big pharmaceutical scam that Fauci put in. So it doesn't really qualify for either the 1986 or the 2005 variation, the variant of criminality that was put in by George W. Bush. And I put that out, and then I saw this article that somebody sent me that was on Friday, the 13th, August the 13th. I thought it was something original, but it's not actually original. What was original was I said, well, let's argue that they don't have immunity. And so I think these people who have been damaged, who have been crippled by this, I think they ought to sue these pharmaceutical companies and say, what you produced is not a vaccine. And it is not a vaccine because Webster's Dictionary has changed the definition, and that's exactly what they have done. They've been rapidly going back and backfilling the definition of a vaccine. So this article from vaccineimpact.com, very good. What they did was they showed screen clips of Merriam-Webster's dictionary. The vaccine has been defined the same way for many, many, many years, defined exactly like I told you. Let me read that long-term definition of a vaccine. It's very short and very concise. Definition of a vaccine: a preparation of killed microorganisms or living attenuated organisms or living fully virulent organisms that is administered to produce or artificially increase immunity to a particular disease. Exactly what I said. In other words, it's... purpose of a vaccine is not to fight a disease. A vaccine does not stop a disease. Anything that stops or fights a disease is called a therapeutic, and there's a different testing procedure from the FDA. There's two major classifications, therapeutics and vaccines. So anything that fights a disease is called a therapeutic. But a vaccine is there simply to train your immune system with a dead or weak pathogen. It's just that simple. So I can make it a lot more concise. But it was fairly short. It's fairly concise. And then on January the 26th of this year, 2021, Webster's Dictionary changed it to add genetic material and mRNA. And so now the new definition, the new extended definition, more than twice as long, it is a preparation administered by injection to stimulate the body's immune response, an antigenic preparation of typically inactivated or attenuated pathogenic agents, or a, this is definition B that they've just added as of January 26th this year, as they're rolling out this thing, they changed the definition of a vaccine. You see the game that's being played here? It's not a vaccine, but they changed the definition in Webster's dictionary to say that a preparation, this is also a vaccine, they say now, a preparation of genetic material, such as a strand or synthesized messenger RNA, that's mRNA, that is used by the cells of the body to produce an antigenic substance, such as a fragment of a virus spike protein. Oh, well, wow. Yeah, that sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Sounds like you've got big pharmaceutical companies paying Webster's to rewrite the definitions of vaccines, doesn't it? That's pretty cynical, pretty conspiratorial, isn't it? I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was what was happening. These people, as you just heard that lawyer say, they're making over $1 billion a month. You don't think they could send some cash along with a suggestion that, oh, by the way, you know, you need to make that a little bit more accurate. It just doesn't represent what currently are vaccines. You know, you could do it very subtly like that. As they point out, it was then changed again in June. So we've changed the definition that had been there for many, many years of a vaccine. As always, the definition of vaccine, a dead or weakened pathogen to train your immune system. Then they changed it in January to include genetic injections, genetic material, genetic code injections, GCIs. They changed it in January, and then they changed it again in June. June 1st. And they gave a lot of examples of mRNA vaccines. And so now what used to be a short paragraph is now more than a page to print. It's actually a page and a half, the definition. So I'm not going to read you the whole thing, but they got even more explicit. And they basically started putting in examples, and these examples are coming straight out of the press releases. It reads like a commercial. except that unlike the Ask Your Doctor commercials, the Ask Your Dictionary commercials don't have any disclaimers about what it'll do to you. That's the difference in this paid commercial. So now they have, it was just one sentence, and now it is a page and a half printed. And so they have an antigenic preparation, typically inactivated or attenuated and so forth. And then they give you some examples of that, like a polio vaccine. Then the second thing is now the messenger RNA that I read to you, and then a whole bunch of examples. One of the examples is mRNA vaccine, which spurs the body to produce the spike protein internally. A second one, the revolutionary. So this is where it sounds like a commercial. This is in the dictionary now, the online dictionary, Merriam-Webster's. The revolutionary messenger RNA vaccines, now available, have been over a decade in development. I mean, this is nothing but a commercial. This is not a definition. This is a commercial. They've been paid off. And then they have a note underneath that, and they say vaccines may contain adjuvants such as aluminum hydroxide. I thought that was a conspiracy theory that they had aluminum in them. They keep telling us, oh, we don't have aluminum in them anymore. We don't have mercury in them anymore. May contain aluminum hydroxide designed to enhance the strength and the duration of the body's immune system. It may also have polyethylene glycol to create anaphylactic shock. And then they added yet another definition because it looks like they're getting ready to go in a different direction from the U.S. military. A preparation, this is now the new, a third definition that they've added as of June, along with all these commercials for mRNA. This new additional definition of a vaccine is a preparation or an immunotherapy that is used to stimulate the body's immune response against non-infectious substances, agents, or diseases. The U.S. Army is testing a ricin vaccine, and many of the most promising new cancer vaccines use dendritic cells to train the immune system, and so forth. You see how they're rewriting the dictionaries? They're rewriting the laws. They're rewriting our culture. They're rewriting everything right now. And you need to have some discernment as to the time that you live in. And you need to have a foundation, an anchor. You need to understand what you believe. And you need to hold to that. Paul Craig Roberts says all the evidence is in. The COVID jab is a failure. That's my term. He called it the COVID vaccine. I understand. And I've had people complain to me, don't call it a vaccine. They've got you calling it a vaccine. And I understand, we all understand what's happening. It's a, you know, we sometimes say red states. And we know that red is the color of communists. And we know how they set that up deliberately. But anyway, what Paul Craig Roberts says is due to Big Pharma's greed and Tony Fauci's hubris, an experimental technology was rushed into mass usage prior to its many adverse consequences being known, making this an issue of vaccines versus non-vaccines, however, has now put this on the table with financial issues deep religious, should say, from a political standpoint, that kind of religious conviction that they have. It has now turned this into a general thing about vaccines. And the whole point of Paul Craig Roberts is that we should understand that this truly isn't a vaccine. And he said the solution, of course, is to remove censorship of experts and the bans on known cures. So we can have things like ivermectin. But the current blind and ignorant authoritarianism must cease. That's why I'm very encouraged by what I played for you yesterday. The parents who were at a school board meeting where they're trying to force masks on because Fauci says so, like Simon says. And I'm going to play that again for you. I can't hear this enough. As soon as this woman says, well, we have all these experts like Fauci, listen to the reaction of the crowd.
Effective in fighting COVID under rules established by health experts. One would have to dismiss the views of highly educated and experienced scientists, people like Dr. Anthony Fauci or Dr.
Excuse me.
That's not allowed. See, you're not allowed to talk about certain things. You're not allowed to laugh at certain people. You want to know who rules you? It's who you're not allowed to criticize. Is he an expert? Well, as Paul Craig Roberts points out, he said, following the conclusions of a Nobel Prize winner in medicine and other top-level experts, I have attributed what the medical establishment calls new cases, breakthroughs, Delta variants, to adverse responses to the vaccine itself, even questioning the existence of the Delta variant. But after listening to Dr. Robert Malone, it appears that there are variants also, and that there will be more variants. Thus, the new breakout of what are reported as COVID cases consists of both adverse reactions to the vaccine as well as illnesses from new variants. And this is, of course, what he's talking about is the ADE effect that has been well known for some of these traditional vaccines for quite some time. Dr. Malone invented the mRNA technology, as he points out. He says he's a member of the establishment. He's not a kook. He's not a conspiracy theorist. He's not an anti-vaxxer. Well, I don't mind being called any of those things. I don't like to be called a kook, but I'll admit that I investigate conspiracies. I'm a conspiracy investigator. I'm a conspiracy analyst. That's why I don't believe 9/11, because that's a bogus conspiracy by our government to get us started into a war, world wars that never end. I've been an anti-vaxxer ever since I saw that they had no liability on this stuff. I'm sorry, but you're not going to get me to take a product for which the producers make a very large profit and have absolutely no liability. So until the vaccine companies are willing to stand behind their product and take the consequences if they do something harmful, I'm an anti-vaxxer, hardcore anti-vaxxer. But these are not even vaccines. This is something different. So, but he goes on to say, Dr. Malone has been a solid member of the establishment. The Defense Department has relied on him for years. And he's got a clip to a presentation that he gave. He says the first 25 minutes is taken up with his explanation of who he is, his background, his experience. He explains the origin and the reason for the official public health policy that experts, no matter how distinguished, are censored when they depart from the official but ever-changing CDC, NIH, WHO, FDA narrative. In other words, the official public health bureaucracies have a monopoly on the explanation. And if you get off of that, you get some loudmouth with a hammer gaveling you into silence, whether that is Twitter or YouTube or Facebook or the mainstream media or some power-hungry jerk in a local school board meeting. They'll hammer you into silence. Dr. Malone explains that the mainstream media is interlocked with the public health bureaucracies and that it acts as a censoring agent. And listen to this. He speaks with humor about being fact-checked and deplatformed by a high school dropout who was employed to shut down misinformation. Yeah. The bottom line is that... just as that quote from Dr. Yaden I played for yesterday, he said, you don't even need to have, in the UK, A-levels in biology. He said, you just need to have common sense. As a matter of fact, if you had watched these people, as I have for many years, the way they would lie to people, the way they would manipulate statistics, the way they would use fear to try to get people to take their annual flu shots for money, then you've seen this whole rodeo before. And you know exactly what the MO is, the method of operation for these usual suspects like Fauci, the NIH, WHO, FDA, CDC. But Malone makes it clear, says Paul Craig Roberts, that the Delta variant is going to run through the population and no amount of vaccination, masks, or lockdowns can do anything about it. He says there's no effective treatments. He said Malone himself used ivermectin and was fine. Fortunately, he reports the Delta variant is less serious than COVID-19, but he says future variants may not be. If we continue to use a vaccine that trains new variants to escape immune systems, a number of distinguished scientists have reached the same conclusion. And again, this is the ADE effect. For the first time in history, the world's population has been used for mass clinical testing of an experimental injection. The public health bureaucracies bet the entire ball game on the mRNA vaccine. It's a long climb It's a long limb for them to climb back, especially when they have no other policy to suggest. But I would suggest to you that there's more to this, of course, than just bad medical advice, about more to it than just financial corruption, cronyism, and the rest of this. Because everything that they have proposed to do to us, everything that they continue to do to us, even when they don't even bother anymore to try to make a statistical lie, put together a statistical lie to put their policies out. They just say, well, we haven't got the data, but we're going to tell you this is what it is now. Everything that they're doing is to extend and to increase all of these draconian measures gradually. That's what you need to understand. And that's how you need to understand that your time is up to do something about this. The FDA has now approved boosters. And Pfizer and Moderna are set to get billions from the sale of a third shot, writes childrenshealthdefense.org. They've now amended the emergency use authorization. They have not authorized it fully, but they've amended the emergency use authorization to give it to people with weakened immune systems, and they can give them an extra vaccine dose. Israel started doing the so-called boosters July 12th to people 60 years and older. Yet, Israeli Health Ministry data published on August the 12th showed 14 Israelis had been infected with COVID a week after receiving the booster shot. 11 people infected were 60 years or older, and 2 were hospitalized, while the others, 3, received the third dose because they were immunocompromised. Fauci is responding and saying, no vaccine, at least not within this category, is going to have an indefinite amount of protection here. Who told you that these things are going to work, right? I don't know. Did I tell you they were going to work? Yeah, you did, actually. But he says, inevitably, there's going to be a time where you got to get boosts. he's boosted it. We are confident in this vaccine and the third dose. But you have to remember, said Jerrica Pitts, Pfizer's director of global media relations. She said this: you have to remember, the vaccine efficacy study is still going on. What? Yeah. You mean this is an ongoing study? Oh, yes. Yes, they never did the phase 3 tests. They didn't run a full-term phase 2 test. You are the guinea pigs. You are the lab rats. And these are the people who, remember, told us the Monday after the election. It was Pfizer who said 94% effective. And then the next week you had Moderna come out and say, they said they're 90% effective. The next week you had Moderna come out and say, we're 94% effective. And then the very next day, Pfizer came out and said 94.5%. And Russia was in there in the middle, 92, 93%. This was obviously a bunch of one-upmanship lies that were being told. And now Pfizer is saying the efficacy study is still ongoing and we need to have evidence. This is why Netanyahu sold out his people, said, we'll give you the data for 2 years, which is what they would typically run the study for. We'll give you the data for 2 years on all the people in Israel. You just put us at the front of the line so we can vaccinate our people first. Because they already understood, all of these leaders understood from their globalist confabs that they go to, that nobody is going to be traveling in or out of your country unless you get to a certain percentage of people vaccinated. Has nothing to do with herd immunity. You don't get herd immunity if the vaccine doesn't work. You don't get herd immunity if the vaccine doesn't last. Herd immunity is a concept that was posited in the early 20th century before we had these mass vaccine campaigns. And it's essentially an add-on to Farr's Law. It goes back to the 1840s. It shows the bell-shaped curve. Remember that curve that we're supposed to flatten? That's exactly what that was. Meanwhile, Pfizer said that if a third dose couldn't combat Delta, they're prepared to come up with a tailor-made vaccine within 100 days. Even more money. Now we have a bespoke vaccine. We have tailor-made this for you. And it's exactly what you need for this variant. And then I am sure that we will have another variant next week, and we will do another bespoke vaccine for that. And you'll need to take that one as well. and you need to pay us billions of dollars more. I mean, this, we really are, quite literally, folks, we're in the emperor has no clothes territory. And you've got Pfizer out there making more and more special clothes for the emperor. And we all have to bow down and pretend that, you know, this is a beautiful suit when it's actually nothing at all. Reports of injuries, deaths, and other COVID vaccines climb steadily as the FDA and CDC sign off on the third shot, writes Children's Health Defense Fund. Pfizer, again, what they're saying is that this booster thing, they're saying it's in phase one. Yeah, phase one data. Phase one is usually, you got three phases. Phase one, done after animal studies, which they didn't do too well in their animal studies, so they kind of, you know, hid that information. Anyway, phase one is when you start to give it to the first humans, and usually these are people who are prisoners who are signing up for this because they really haven't got much to lose, and they're, you know, yeah, let me do that. Years ago, you know, you've seen it, let's see, what was the movie? It had Richard Pryor, Gene Hackman in it, Stir Crazy, and it was the Huntington prison up in Huntington, Texas. And when we lived here in the early 80s, Karen and I went up to that one time. They would have an annual prison rodeo there. And they would dress all the inmates in white. And and they actually incorporated this into that movie, Stir Crazy. These guys who were desperate to do anything, they were stir crazy. And so they would do anything. You know, yeah, I'll sign up for the rodeo. I'll sign up for a vaccine experiment, whatever. Just let me do something different. I'm going crazy here. And it was the craziest rodeo I've ever been to. I mean, we went to a lot of rodeos back then. It was a pretty regular thing. There was one rodeo that was every Saturday night, but there's nothing anything like this. I mean, they had events where they had a massive crew with a horse that had not been broken, and they'd done some things to the horse to make it not very happy. And they had to put a saddle on the horse, and then, you know, they'd have a team of four guys. And so they'd put the saddle on the horse, and then one guy would have to ride it to the end in order to win the event. And the way they were doing it, every one of the teams, they had one guy go up and jump on the horse's neck with a wrestling hold and bite the horse's ear. And the horse would freeze. It's like, you know, and it wouldn't move. And then the other guys would put the saddle on while it was frozen, while that guy's biting the horse's ear. And then when the guy would get in the saddle, he'd let go of the horse's head, and that horse would start bucking. And several of the guys did not get the saddle cinched correctly. It was pretty amazing. But the point of the story is that these people who are in prison will do pretty much anything. And that's where they get the people to participate in these phase one studies. Except that we're all prisoners now, aren't we? Yeah. And they're testing the booster. Vacuous vaccine hype. An article from Adam Dick at the Ron Paul Institute. White House press secretary claims that shots have saved tens of millions of people's lives. What does this sound like? Do you remember when Obama was president and he was talking about how he was saving the economy, you know, after the 2008 crash and so forth, real estate crash? And he came out one time and they had a press, they said, well, we have millions of jobs that we've saved. And they put that in as part of their unemployment projection. Jobs saved? That isn't anything that you can quantify. That's nothing that anybody had ever tried to put out before. Of course, we did have President Trump say, based on the ridiculously absurd Imperial College of London simulation that said 2.2 million people were going to die. And so when the official COVID count was 200,000, Trump was campaigning multiple times. He said, I saved 2 million lives, just as ridiculous as Obama. And now you've got, just as ridiculous, Jen Psaki saying the same thing. So she said, before she took a vacation because of Afghanistan, she said, we've seen tens of millions of people's lives saved who've gotten the vaccine, and the data is clear all across the country. So, you know, use the term data, use the term science, and that's it. End of discussion, because I'm authority figure. Well, Adam Dick says, do you realize that even their own official stuff, shows that there's less than a million deaths. I think their official numbers are somewhere around 600,000 or something. So they show, even on their official baloney numbers, they show less than a million deaths since the records began being kept early last year. So we're supposed to believe that by giving out an experimental coronavirus shot that only started rolling out in limited fashion in December, that tens of millions of Americans have chosen not to receive, that this has now prevented, you know, tens of millions of people's deaths when even under their worst-case scenario, 600,000 deaths. Fauci is poo-pooing the idea that, you know, I said he had a Pfizer spokesperson saying, well, you know, efficacy is being reviewed. Why'd they say that? Well, because it's not 90% effective. It's not 94.5% effective. It's 42% effective, the numbers that came out. Of course, they'll say, well, that's the imaginary Delta variant. Whether it's imaginary or not, these people are imagining and they've got an excuse, right? And so, yeah, only 42% effective. So Fauci is trying to downplay that. He says, well, this study is a preprint study. It hasn't been peer-reviewed, he said this weekend on Face the Nation. And he would know about that because by using a preprint study that was not peer-reviewed, that's how he got his friends billions of dollars, his friends at Gilead, billions of dollars by declaring himself. He did a study, and he didn't have it peer-reviewed. And on the basis of his own study, his own un-peer-reviewed study, he pronounced remdesivir the standard of care, changing the definition of what efficacy was. Remdesivir is a therapeutic, and it's supposed to treat it. And he didn't have any evidence that it treated it. But he called it the standard of care, made several billion dollars for his friends at Gilead. So he knows exactly how that works. It's just amazing the links that these people will go to. This, of course, from Chris Minahan at Information Liberation, pulling the story from The Hill, where you have an individual who died, a fully vaccinated man, dies of COVID-19, and his daughter says he was cautious, and this is what The Hill says. Doctors said the condition of the father could have been worse if he was not vaccinated at all. He died. How could it get worse than that? Yeah, so that's what The Hill is telling you. No matter how bad it is, it could always be worse. You know, he died, but it could have been worse if he hadn't been vaccinated. Meanwhile, India is moving to block ivermectin. Wikipedia is not even allowed to publish recent meta-analysis on ivermectin. And you're not allowed to say anything concerning a website, by the way. You may want to jot this down. IVMmeta.com, as in IVM, as in ivermectin. IVMmeta.com shows 61 studies comprising 23,000 patients, which reveal up to a 96% reduction in death with ivermectin. But, you know, there's a blackout on that. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, and I just want to thank a couple of listeners who have sent notes and pictures. Had John in Florida sent a picture of his dog, Cookie, and say glad to hear that Scout is doing better. Prayer does help. Yes, it does. And thank you all for praying for him. He still has to undergo daily treatment. It's a big thing. Karen does that. And because his leg on the inside is not healed, it's almost completely covered up with at least one layer of skin on the outside, though. So it's pretty amazing. We've taken photographs of the progress on it, and it's pretty amazing what your body is capable of doing, because God made it that way. And thank you, John. Appreciate that. And the picture of a Cookie. Another note here from Linda, who says, thank you for your bold and interesting show. I've been a conservative Christian for many years. My crazy libertarian brother introduced me to your show. And I'm somewhere in the middle with all those different labels. Your humor helps me to make some of the bad news go down a little bit easier. And that's the thing. I think we need to, as Christians, keep this in perspective. And, when these people rail against us and rail against God, we need to know that God laughs. And so that's appropriate for us to do that as well, right? When they rail against God, he laughs. He doesn't get angry. I don't get angry if people attack my beliefs because they can withstand the attack. You know, I mean, would I get angry if somebody told me that there's no such thing as gravity? I would laugh at them. I mean, that's the appropriate response. So anyway, thank you for your hard work. And thank you, Linda, for your support. We'll talk a little bit about America held hostage on this day 521. As Alex Berenson, former New York Times science reporter, who has now been sent to the cyber gulag for heresy. As he points out, he's now writing on Substack. He says, it's a good day for Vietnam analogies. And he said, I'll make one here about vaccines. And what he is saying, in essence, he compares it to the Tet Offensive. When he talks about what is happening in Israel, Naftali Bennett saying 78 out of 79 Israelis who died last week did not perform all three required vaccinations. In other words, the third vaccine is not a luxury. It really saves lives. Non-immunization for the third time leaves senior citizens in mortal danger. Get vaccinated now. And he says, mortal danger? Get vaccinated now? He said, these older Israelis were already vaccinated multiple times. We've never seen that before either with a vaccine, have we? All right. We have never had a so-called vaccine that was not a dead or weakened version of what you're being exposed to. Instead, you know, giving you a genetic code to make your body manufacture the toxic protein spikes. And given multiple injections of that, now two are not enough. Now we got to have three. Is the science settled on any of this stuff? Did they not know that from the beginning? Of course they didn't. They don't know any of this stuff. And as the Pfizer spokesperson said, we're still studying the efficacy. We don't know. So he said, Israel feels their prime minister is now more or less admitting that people who have had multiple vaccines are unprotected. You know, if you haven't got the third shot, it's like not having anything at all. That third shot, that's the charm. So he says, you know, when we talk about Vietnam, go back and remember 1967, in the face of the rising American discontent, the U.S. Army, our U.S. government, insisted that it was making progress in beating back the North Vietnamese Army and the Viet Cong. Then in late January 1967, the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese launched a massive offensive that coincided with a Lunar New Year, which in Vietnamese is called Tet, the Tet Offensive that we all remember. All over South Vietnam, including in the capital of Saigon, American and South Vietnamese troops came under attack. Many military historians have made the point that the Tet Offensive was a failure for the attackers, and yet, and the American military was not overrun. But that didn't matter. The scale of the offensive put the lie to the Pentagon's insistence that it was near victory. The Tet Offensive made it clear that even with a force of 500,000 American soldiers and with a massive air power advantage, the U.S. was further from pacifying Vietnam than it had been years before. And really from that point on, the war was over. But the killing wasn't. The American government couldn't admit the truth that it was obvious to anyone who was paying attention. Even when it did admit the truth, it needed years more to extricate itself. And from 1969 to 1971, more than 20,000 Americans and many more Vietnamese died in a fight that everyone could see was pointless. Exactly what we were playing with earlier today. Ron Paul saying 10 years ago, there's no point in this. There's absolutely no point. You don't even know what winning is. And I've seen that so many times in my life. That's why I said I wasn't, you know, I was at the tail end of this. I had to register for the draft, but they ended the war just before I got out of high school in my senior year. So, you know, it was not a decision that I had to make, but I already had made my decision. I had seen the lies of the American government. I had seen how they had despicably used American soldiers that they had drafted. And I had seen how it was a wholesale murder in Vietnam of the people who lived there. I wasn't going to be a part of that one way, shape, or the other. You lock me up or whatever you have to do, but I'm not participating in that. COVID has now reached its Tet Offensive moment, says Alex Berenson. Anyone looking hard at the data can see the stark limits of the vaccines. Unfortunately, the group includes very few journalists. Almost no one yesterday pointed out what Naftali Bennett was actually saying. It is a fraud. It was always a fraud. It was always designed. The design, going back to 9/11, the design was to have draconian measures and an emergency vaccine that was required of everybody. And, of course, we also know from the climate agenda that the goal is to take everything from everyone. They were able to accomplish all of that this last year. Free society dwindles as permission requirements grow, writes Reason magazine. That's right. You either have rights or you live life as a government-granted privilege where you ask Simon Says for everything. May I? May I do this? May I do that? That's not the way we want to live. That's not going to be the America that we're going to have. We're not going to accept this. Just get that in your head. Just don't have the defeatist attitude that they've won. They're going to do this to us. There's nothing we can do to stop them. We can stop this. There's many things that we can do. And if we peacefully resist this in numbers, that is the best way to stop this. The best way. Refuse to participate and this reset of our society. Resist it. The COVID-19 pandemic, writes Reason, has been a bonanza for government officials, allowing them to extend authority that they then exercise with relatively little oversight or restraint in ways that would have been inconceivable in the past. And now it has accelerated the transformation of previously free societies into permission-based states. I'm glad to see Reason talking about this. Because last year, Reason, the Cato Institute's taken a pass on free speech attacked by big corporations. Oh, they can do whatever they want to, they say. No, no. We have fundamental rights. Part of the reason that this is happening within the libertarian movement is because the libertarians have lost sight of the fact that we are all equal under the law because we are all created by God in the image of God, and that's what gives us that baseline equality before the law. We all have different abilities, and that's why we have a meritocracy. People find what it is that they are good at, that they're interested in, and that serves society. We compete on the basis of merit, but understand that there is a fundamental basis there based on our humanity being created in the image of God. And that's what they've lost sight of. And so they say, well, the corporations, since the only thing that matters is, you know, who's got title to this or that, then we just, you know, throw you out of the digital public square that they own. That's not appropriate. And for the last year, Reason has been a big cheerleader of the vaccine. And last year, during the election, I would have loved to have had a liberty-loving candidate to get behind in the Libertarian Party. And I was very concerned to see that that candidate wasn't there. I even know Joe Jorgensen from decades ago. I was very involved in the Libertarian Party. And she set it out. Over the summer, she was talking about Black Lives Matter and completely ignoring the lockdown. You had one guy who was running for governor in Indiana, a Libertarian, by the name of Rainwater. And he started talking about the lockdown as a liberty issue. And all of a sudden, he zoomed up in the polls. He got up to close to 20% in some of the early polls. Now, of course, that kind of support always falls off when it actually comes to the election day because people are afraid of the of voting. You know, they get people so afraid of the Democrat or so afraid of the Republican, they're afraid to vote for the person that they really want. And so we always see that fall off. But it got so high that Rainwater got scared, I think. I actually reached out to him and said, come on, let's talk about this. Give you a platform to talk to people. Oh, I don't want to do that. It's like, I can win this thing. I don't want to do that. That was my feeling about it. I mean, he didn't actually say that. But reached out to him. I'm not doing any interviews, man. He's like, stop, leave me alone. I already said too much. While more severe measures, writes Reason, such as mandating vaccines for the interstate travel. You see how bad this is? It never ends. It's continually going, right? And listen to what they say as reported by the Associated Press. They say, we can mandate vaccines for interstate travel or change how the federal government reimburses treatment for those who are unvaccinated. See? Again, we'll hit them with the medical, give you additional charges, right? Pay more for your health insurance. Restrict medical care to people. Make sure they can't travel between states. They said, while these things are on the table, they've been discussed. The administration is worried that they would be too polarizing for the moment. So this is where it's headed. I've been telling you this for over a year and a half, that this is a gradual process. It is a moving of what you feel is the new normal. It's moving the Overton window. Right now, we're not going to, you know, we know it's going to get people too upset if we boil the frogs too quickly. People will push back against vaccine passports to go from one state to the other, even by car. So we're going to do it gradually. First, we'll put vaccine passports for people who are coming into the country internationally, except for the people coming across the border illegally. Then we'll let them come in. We'll test them. Even if they're positive, we'll put them on a plane, no mask, fly them anywhere we want to. So it begins, though, by getting into the minds of people that you're not going to travel internationally. Then they bring on, you're not going to travel by air domestically. Then it'll be, or by bus or by train. And then it'll be checkpoints. Show me your papers if you want to drive out of this state. It's one of the reasons why I'm anxious to get out of Texas. Get somewhere where I want to, if I can't get out of a state someplace, I'd be happier. As a general rule, until 1941, U.S. citizens, writes Reason, U.S. citizens were not required to have a passport for travel abroad. Prior to 1941, you didn't have the whole idea of a passport, didn't apply. You know, I grew up, we used to say, it's a free country, do whatever you want, right? Can I do this? It's a free country, that was an expression. You don't hear that anymore. Airline travel in the early 1960s was still fairly carefree. If you had a ticket, you could get on a plane, said the L.A. Times in 2014. Matter of fact, in the 1960s, if you wanted to go on a hunting trip to, let's say, South Dakota to hunt pheasants, it's no big deal. You just carry the rifle on board with you, and they'd put it in the luggage rack there. You know, they have the coats. Starting in 2009, Americans had to show passports to be readmitted to the United States on their return from journeys beyond the border, driving, right? So the federal government making interstate travel a privilege granted to only to those in its good graces would just be one more step down a path that has been traveled before. But it would be a big one. Georgetown Law's Merrill Justin Chertoff said freedom of movement within and between states is constitutionally protected. As a matter of fact, when you look at the Commerce Clause, you know, we got three things in the Constitution that the power usurpers have used to try to carve out things for the federal government. One of those is the Commerce Clause. Of course, they also have the General Welfare Clause and the Supremacy Clause. And so they'll say, well, we can do this or that. They've tried to use the Commerce Clause to justify the war on drugs, except that the Commerce Clause was there when they did alcohol prohibition, and they still needed a constitutional amendment for alcohol prohibition. But now they're saying that that Commerce Clause that was always there gives them sufficient capability to ban anything that they want to. They just don't pay attention to the Constitution anymore. But when we look at that, again, I don't think either one of those things actually gives them that ability. But let's assume that they did. Let's assume that they have supremacy. Let's assume that they have the ability to do whatever they wish with the Commerce Clause. But if those things were in the body of the Constitution, they were dealt with by the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. You had Madison and others who were concerned that some of those things might be misused, that they would misread some of these capabilities like the welfare, General Welfare Clause, or Commerce Clause. They might read into that more than is intended, so they specifically prohibited that. They said, if you don't have the capability to do something specifically, you cannot assume it. And those powers are retained by the states, and the rights are retained by the people. But freedom of movement is constitutionally protected. The right of Americans to travel interstate in the U.S. has never been substantially judicially questioned or limited. You know what they're going to do if they try to do something like this? They will go back and they will appeal to that SOB, Richard Nixon, who put on a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. That's what they'll do. They'll try to carve it out from that, which is why that should have been shut down from the very beginning. Anyway, Chertoff acknowledged that governments tend to enjoy more leeway in exercising authority when they invoke the words public health. Civil liberties advocates let them get away with it. Spoken truly by Reason Magazine. They've and the Libertarian Party have been very complicit in that over this last year. Sean Spicer, guy who is in charge of the RNC and then became a press secretary for Donald Trump, said Republicans must, quote, have an agenda headed into the midterms. Let's see, what should they be talking about? I just really don't know. What is the problems with America? Is it, I don't know, liberty, constitution, lockdown, vaccine passports, the vaccines themselves, by giving billions of dollars to corporations that have no liability? And then privatizing the profits, is any of that a problem for the Republicans? No, no. He's casting around. He said, you know, it's not enough. People don't like what's happening right now, so, you know, we might win just because they don't like the Democrats. But he said, if you really wanted to secure the border, you'd keep the policies that President Trump had in place. So what year is this? Is this 2015 he said this? No, he just said this just now. Seriously? You think that's the problem now? You think the border is the problem now? We've already seen through your fraud, Sean. We've already seen through Trump's fraud about the border. It was very easy for him to protect it, as I said earlier in the program. Just bring the troops home from Afghanistan, Iraq, put them on the border. That's what Tajikistan did. They could figure that out. Why in America can we not figure that out? He says Republicans shouldn't be in the majority just for the sake of it. Well, I agree with him there. And you shouldn't vote for a Republican just because they got an R behind their name. He said, we need to have an agenda that's focused on instilling and fighting for the conservative principles. What are they? Here's some examples from Sean Spicer. Whether they be economically, fighting for life, fighting for stronger foreign policy, fighting for better trade practices, all the stuff the president's been fighting for in the last 4 years of the Trump administration. What? What? Economics, 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 right? Economically, fighting for a stronger foreign policy. Well, we want to have wars, right? fighting for better trade practices and so forth. Well, it's basically war and economics. And then he mentions fighting for life, because Republicans always like to tell you that they're going to do something about abortion, and yet it's a dodge. They say, yeah, we'll elect us and we'll appoint good Supreme Court justices like Barrett and Kavanaugh. So you understand that. What if the Republicans wanted to do anything to stop this, they would get rid of judicial supremacy. They would point out that the 9th and 10th Amendment makes it clear that we have different spheres of authority. You know, we the people are not a lesser power to the federal government. We're not a lesser power to the state, and the state is not a lesser power to the federal government. We have a division of power. It should not be stacked hierarchically, and we should not have the different branches of the federal government stacked hierarchically either. This is not a pyramid. These are a bunch of, think of this as a molecule with different spheres of authority. And so anyway, in Philadelphia, they're doing double mask mandates. Maybe you ought to think about that, Sean. In Hawaii, they got a Democrat governor, so it'd be safe to criticize this guy, saying that unvaccinated people may cause lockdown. Oh, yeah. Will the Republicans even criticize these people or Democrats? We have a lot of Bible Belt preachers whining. AP News is whining about Bible Belt preachers who are silent about pushing shots. Well, actually, they're not silent. They're pushing back against them. But they want the Bible Belt preachers to be selling them. The AP wants these people to be pharmaceutical salesmen like Trump. So they give an example. They say, Dr. Danny Avila suspected that he might have a problem getting pastors to publicly advocate for the shots. He's head of Virginia's vaccination effort. He's a public health official. When some members of his own church referred to them as the mark of the beast, and so AP has their biblical commentary here where they explain to you what the mark of the beast is. They say this is a biblical reference to allegiance to the devil. Well, I think more specifically, it's about having something that indicates whether you can buy and sell and work and travel and go to school and all the rest of this stuff, right? I mean, we can all talk about, you know, what is the mark? Is it a scratch? Is it a visible sign or whatever? It's an act of submission to the government for your permission to do everything in life. That's what it is. even go to church even, right? Now, you're not going to go to church and some of these other churches if you don't get the vaccine that we all believe in. I just think we ought to, you know, and it probably wouldn't be that hard. I mean, you have big pharmaceutical companies have so much money. I'm sure they could get the Federal Reserve to change what is on the paper that they issue. And instead of "In God We Trust," we could just put "In Vaccines We Trust," because that is the new religion. A few outspoken religious leaders have garnered crowds or media attention for their opposition to the vaccine, such as Tony Spell, who repeatedly defied COVID-19 restrictions to hold in-person services at the Baton Rouge, Louisiana church where he's pastor. And he did it all last year, early on. And all these people are dead now. Everybody died. They died along with AOC on January the 6th, right? I died. And all these people died. Everybody at John MacArthur's church in L.A., they all died too. They don't point out the obvious that you've got thousands of people going this, just at MacArthur's church. You've got 7,000 to 8,000 people, elderly people, on a weekly basis. No masks, no separation, singing. Same thing at Tony Spell's church. So what does AP do? They talk about a pastor, Kevin Blankenship. They said that COVID-19 invaded his independent church in Birmingham, Alabama, sickening three of his family members. That's what they focus on. It's misdirection, lies, things taken out of context, and that's what you can count on the Associated Press for. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us. Here's how you can find the broadcast. Please share it, and how you can support us.
the common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.